every so often so they can get some rest, right?
This is the Quality News Network. UN Secretary General Kofi Annan met with the Lebanese Prime Minister and Foreign Minister in Beirut today. They discussed the UN peacekeeping force, which is expected to start arriving in southern Lebanon within a week. Annan also urged Hezbollah to release two Israeli soldiers to the International Red Cross. Annan's trip continues tomorrow with a stop in Israel. He's urging Israeli officials to lift the country's air and sea blockade of Lebanon. In Jerusalem today, Prime Minister Ehud Olmert said there would be no independent inquiry into the way the war was handled, but he did authorize a more limited investigation, which will not authorize the dismissal of top officials. In Kentucky, the National Transportation Safety Board says a Calm Air flight that crashed yesterday morning was cleared for takeoff, but instead of going down the runway it should have, it went down another that was shorter and meant for smaller planes. The airport's director says a taxi route for commercial jets was changed the week before. CNN reports that the DNA from John Mark Carr, the schoolteacher who was a suspect in the JonBenet Ramsey murder, does not match the same found on her clothing nearly 10 years ago. The district attorney says murder, kidnapping, and sexual assault charges will not be filed. In Baghdad, a U.S. general said today that violence there has dropped by half since July, when more U.S. troops arrived to help curb sectarian violence. He also said Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki would assume control of the country's military next month. Near Baghdad, at least 20 Iraqi soldiers and up to 50 gunmen were killed in clashes between Iraqi soldiers and Shiite militia. Today, 11 people were killed and 63 wounded in a suicide car bombing. 8 U.S. soldiers were killed over the weekend. Tropical Storm Ernesto hit Cuba today and is now headed toward Florida. Governor Jeb Bush has declared a state of emergency, and residents of the Florida Keys have been ordered to evacuate. In Gulfport, Mississippi today, President Bush marked the one-year anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. It was his 13th trip to the area since the disaster. He said he sees a sense of renewal in the area. In California, a new bill would require that condoms be distributed to prisoners to prevent the spread of sexually transmitted diseases. But opponents say officials should enforce state law, which bans sex between inmates. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Business news is next.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network-quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
Prudential Financial and a subsidiary have agreed to pay a $600 million penalty to the Justice Department, thus to settle a fund scandal to which the company will admit no wrongdoing. Dow Jones has put 6 community newspapers up for auction. The publisher of the Wall Street Journal expects to make about $300 million in the sale. Google and eBay are teaming up to form an Internet advertising alliance. By clicking onto a webpage link, online shoppers can use the service to contact eBay merchants or Google advertisers more quickly. Corel is purchasing multimedia software maker InterVideo in a $196 million cash deal. InterVideo makes software that allows users to record, edit, and play digital content. Boeing has a $700 million deal to make 10 jets for India's Air Sahara. Boeing 737 planes will start being delivered by mid-2009. Toyota, Honda, and Mazda report their global production rose last month. However, Nissan and Mitsubishi reported declines. A management-led investment group will acquire Kinder Morgan and take the natural gas pipeline operator private. The deal includes $15 billion in cash and $7 billion in debt assumption. Light sweet crude settled today at $70.61. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow is up 68 points, NASDAQ up 20, S&P 500 up 7. You can hear more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Welcome, welcome, welcome one and all to this Monday edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid, and I am thrilled to death to be back for another week of, dare we call it, high-quality conversation radio. Yes, we dare. And, you know, it's the 28th of August. It's a year. About this time last year, we were all watching a swirling mass of death. It wasn't exactly zooming, was it? No, it was creeping. It was creeping so slowly that even the most laggard, sluggard, unresponsive federal government in the history of the United States should have been able to account for the devastation. It was good, but it couldn't. Bush administration couldn't deal with it. And the best they could do was try to blame, Ray Nagin, Kathleen Blanco, some bus driver, the people. Why didn't they own cars? Why didn't they drive? You know. But all of this is symptomatic of something larger. Because I'm reminded, it all piles up. It wasn't that much longer. You know, not at all. It was months, just a few months. After Katrina, that we were finding out what negligence in other corners of the government had led to, to wit, the Sago number one mine disaster in which 12 miners died, direct and proximately caused by the negligence of the government, just like the thousands of deaths in the swirling, fetid waters of the failed levees in New Orleans in the Ninth Ward, and the storm surge that just destroyed entire communities along the Gulf Coast in Mississippi, Louisiana, Alabama. And all of this started, if you want to get right down to it, all of this started in the misbegotten decision to invade a foreign country that had not raised a finger against us, and to throw billions and billions of dollars down a bloody rat hole. Now, we are joined at this time. I want to talk about a particular aspect of that thrown away money. We are joined at this time by Chris Floyd. Chris, are you there with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Chris, thank you so much for joining us this, this evening for me. It's morning for you. We're talking to you. You're in the United Kingdom. You have written for Truth Out, among other things, about an organization by the name of Custer Battles. Why should that name mean something to us?
Well, besides its sort of ill-omened echo of Little Bighorn, Custer Battles is a... one of these, what I call crony conquistadors. They're war profiteers who jumped in on the Iraq War Pork Festival as soon as we invaded. There are a couple of insiders, ex-special ops guys, failed Republican politicians, you know, the usual people that were attracted to the war profiteering bonanza that the Iraq invasion was, and they formed a little company out of nothing. Apparently, somehow they got over there to Iraq in May 2003, and before you know it, in about 3 weeks, they'd been given a contract to secure the Baghdad airport, something they'd never done before. They were handed $2 million in cash. I mean, they were broke, by the way. They were a broke company. They hadn't really got off the ground.
They hadn't really done anything, had they?
They had really, they had a few little contracts here and there, but they had nothing. They had not really got off the ground as any sort of. And as I said, they were broke. They had to borrow money to get over to Baghdad. But somehow, I don't know if it's through their, or one of them was an ex-CIA man. That always helps, I suppose. Somehow or another, again, this is very mysterious, they were given this contract, $16 million contract to secure Baghdad airport. But just to get the ball rolling, they were given $2 million in cash in a duffel bag, which they then took and put in a Jordanian bank. Anyway, the point was they went on, and they were running basically pretty much of a scam, I guess. They had lots of complaints about what they were delivering, what they were not delivering, what they were doing, what they were not doing, but mainly the overbilling. What they were doing, what they did was they, in good corporate fashion, they set up a series of fake companies, you know, offshore companies, shell companies, and they would then bill to those companies and then bill the government, because Custer Battles, like Halliburton and a lot of these other companies, had been given a cost-plus contract, and you probably know what that is. That's where you get a government contract, and they guarantee you a profit, no matter how much your costs are. They're still going to give you, you know, tack on their 5%. So the more you, the more expensive your operation is, the more money you're going to make. So they inflated their costs. And so, to make a long story short, it's a bit late over here. They had some whistleblowers, some insiders, you know, some good guys who worked there for them, you know, who went over there to try to do some work. And they didn't like this fraud. And so they filed what is called a false claims. A suit, a whistleblower suit under the False Claims Act. And that's a law that goes back to Abraham Lincoln that he set up during the Civil War to try to cut down on war profiteering, which basically says that if you're inside a company and you see them doing war profiteering or defrauding the government in any way, such as the Katrina profiteering, you can file a lawsuit through this False Claims Act, and you'll get a percentage of whatever award it is, but most of it will go back to the federal government. And so these guys filed this lawsuit, and this really brought out all the dirt about Custer Battles. And so they went to trial, they went to a civil trial, and, 12 good men and women and true found them guilty of fraud, massive fraud, you know, fraud in tens of millions of dollars. This is in one case. They have another case supposed to be coming up. The case was heard. They were found guilty. And then over this summer, it was mulled over by the judge in the case because Custer Battles said, and this is the crux of the thing, as they said that they can't be accused of fraud because if they defrauded anyone, they could defrauded the Coalition Provisional Authority, which, you know, which was the mechanism that was set up by the Bush administration.
Yeah, most notably run by L. Paul Bremer.
Run by Paul Bremer. It was created, staffed, funded, and operated by the Bush administration. But now they claim that it was actually some sort of quasi-international. It's organization limbo. It does. U.S. government. This is what Custer Battles claimed. And this is what the judge, Judge T.S. Ellis III, last week, or a couple weeks ago, on the 18th it was, he overturned the verdict against them and said, yeah, you're right. You know, even though it was appointed by the Bush administration, even though Bremer was Bush's personal appointee, and even though Bremer himself exercised that during the CPA's rule, it's not really a government organization, so there's no fraud, you know. It's dissolved, as you remember, when Bremer bugged out of Baghdad a couple of years ago.
Yeah, hauled one flag down, ran the other flag up, and said, see you later, guys.
Yeah, see you later, guys, you know. I'm out of here. And so when the CPA was dissolved, there's no fraud. Now, there's a lot of these whistleblower cases in the pipeline, and they've basically been blown out of the water because the main thing is that the government, the federal government, usually joins these whistleblower cases going all the way back to Abraham Lincoln's time. They join in because, after all, they get their money back. They get most of the money back. But, in an almost unprecedented case, the Bush administration has not joined these cases. They're not joining these cases. They're not adding the weight of the federal government behind these fraud cases. And so they're just going to disappear because they're going to be able to say, look, the CPA is not a government agency, and which is, in fact, what John Ashcroft, who was the attorney general when this came about, that's what he declared. You know, he said, well, we can't join the case because it's not part of the CPA, was not a government entity. Well, again, as I say, what this does is just it basically is a blanket immunity for all the corruption that took place during the Coalition Provisional Authority's reign, which was 14 months, during which time, again, as you know, I'm sure you know, almost $9 billion of the money that we had paid for these things is unaccounted for. They don't know where it went.
It's just
$9
gone.
$9 billion. Yeah, it's disappeared, you know. Well, it's not disappeared, it's in somebody's pocket somewhere. But you know, all this was taxpayer money. It's gone. We can't get it back because this sort of, you know, hocus pocus. So that's who Custer Battles is, you know. And so they're just a couple of big contractors. And it's named not after, you know, the great failure, Little Bighorn, which is quite reminiscent of what we're seeing over in Iraq right now.
Right.
But it's named after Scott Battles, I think their names are. That's where the name comes from.
Yeah, Mike Battles and
Custer, is it?
Yeah, Scott Custer. And these characters had not the first clue of what they were doing. They had a motto. Their motto was transforming risk into opportunity. That's all they had. No expertise, no track record, and yet the Bush administration, $2 million isn't chump change, Chris.
Well, I know. Of course, you know, that was during the period where they were tossing out bricks of this. They'd given away. There was no accountability anywhere. And of course, this is just typical of the entire administration. But this is how it works. You know, down and dirty in the trenches.
Well, I understand that. But the thing that fascinates me out of all of this is, you know, what you mentioned. It's highly unusual for the federal government not to get involved in recouping its own money from fraud. And B, the reliance on UN Security Council Resolution 1483.
Yes, that's another sort of thing. Yeah,
it's sort of after the fact. The UN tried to put a little lipstick on a pig, and suddenly, because of this resolution, the Coalition Provisional Authority, as you noted, staffed by Americans, funded by Americans, organized by Americans, suddenly it's not an American organization anymore, according to this judge.
I know, and this is you're right. I mean, the UN resolution was a fig leaf that was basically just almost like a panicky reaction. You know, the U.S. and the U.K. had invaded this country, as you said before, unprovoked, you know, for no reason, which is a vast war crime. They've invaded this country, but what are you going to do? You know, the U.N. wants to have some sort of say, you know, otherwise they might as well just fold up their tent right now. So after it's over with, it's like, okay, you know, the deal is done. Let's scramble. We'll say, okay, now we have a provisional authority. But all, as I mentioned the story, all the money, all the power remained in the hands of Washington. You know, they had command and control over the CPA. I mean, there's no way that it's not, it was not a government entity. And anyway, this money that was defrauded, what we're talking about, this $9 billion, was American money. Now, whether it went to the CPA or the UN or the IRA or whoever it went to, it's still American money that's been defrauded.
Well, that $9 billion would go a long way toward funding universal health care, shoring up schools. Oh, how about fixing the hell and damage caused by Katrina? It could go along.
Really?
Yeah, and that's what that's the line that I was trying to draw there before I brought you on the air, Chris, is that These are slow falling dominoes, if you will.
Absolutely. Well, absolutely. If you think about this, now think about this. What we're talking about here, we're talking about the Coalition Provisional Authority. Well, the authority ended in June 2004. Now think what that $9 billion, not just to repair what's happened after Katrina, but think what you could have used some of that money before Katrina for all those underfunded projects to shore up the levees and to reclaim the lands down there. Where, you know, this is money that was wasted before Katrina. You know this. And so we're talking about things, as you say, you know, this breakdown in infrastructure across the United States, and which is deliberate. It's like a starving of America's infrastructure by people who just want to keep the money for themselves, you know.
And so what this decision says by Judge Ellis is that that money's gone, and we're never going to see it again, and we're not even going to try to look for it.
Well, and on top of that, we're not even going to punish the people who stole it. Basically, that's what that says.
Because this was a civil trial. It's not like these guys were up on criminal charges.
Well, no, they weren't up on criminal charges in this case. This was a civil trial because it was brought under this False Claims Act. No, so what they would have done was they'd had to pay over the jury verdict was a $10 million, which is actually a drop in the bucket of what they actually stole, as far as we know, allegedly stole, let's say. But so they were supposed to pay $10 million, but now they won't pay a dime. And wherever they pocketed this money, and these shell companies that they made, you know, wherever this money has gone, they can keep it. It's not going to be paid back to the American people anywhere.
Well, it might be paid back in one form or another. Chris, you never know. I imagine that when deals like this work out, some of it, sooner or later, finds its way back into things like political action committees, committees to elect presidents, senatorial campaign committees. You know, I mean, let's not be naive. Some of this money is coming home. It's just not going anywhere that we'd like for it to go.
No, absolutely. I mean, that's part of the whole scam of this. This is one point I've often been trying to make in my writing over the last couple of years, is that what a lot of people don't realize, or maybe they do, but anyway, what a lot of people don't seem to realize, is that no matter what happens in the Iraq war now, it doesn't matter if it all goes up in flames tomorrow, we have to jump off the rooftop just like in Saigon. You know, if we, quote, lose Iraq tomorrow, if we lose the war tomorrow, the Bush regime and its people, the Bush faction, political faction, have already won. It's been a win-win scenario for them, because what they have done is they've transferred not just this $9 billion, but they've transferred billions. Now it's getting close to $1 trillion they've transferred from the public purse into their corporate cronies, into their own pockets, in which, as you point out, they use that money then to buy political action committees, to buy political time, to buy political dirt dealers and everything else, and smear campaigns. And they use that money to further tilt the political playing field in America. And so even if they lost Iraq tomorrow, even if we lose Iraq tomorrow, they've already won, because they've got hold of billions and billions of public money, which they will now use for their own partisan purposes. And they've, as we can see in the courts and things like this, they're skewing America's political system for decades to come already, no matter what happens now. No matter what happens if Iraq loses tomorrow or, you know, a Democratic election in 2008, you know, these factions have amassed enormous amounts of power, which will hold undue, unbalanced sway over the American system for a generation or for decades. You know, no matter what we want. So, I mean, this is another aspect of the war that's very, very disturbing.
Let's talk for a minute about the Right Honorable U.S. District Court Judge T.S. Ellis III, Chris.
Yeah.
This was a civil verdict in the Custer Battles case. The, like you said, 12 persons, tried and true, had returned a verdict against Custer Battles in a $10 million verdict, said pay the money back. The judge mulls over it, you know, takes a couple of months over the course of the summer, goes, you know, out on the yacht, whatever, and comes back and says, you know, why should these nice boys? They're veterans, after all. Why should these nice boys have to pay back $10 million? But that is not all that Judge Ellis has done, is it, Chris?
Well, no, Judge Ellis is an interesting case. I would like to have gone into a little bit more. He's presided over several interesting cases in the last few weeks.
What district is he in?
Well, he's under... I'm not sure what he's in. It's East Virginia, something like that. He's somewhere in Virginia. I do know that the appeals court above him, you know, where if you appeal his rulings, it goes up to the U.S. Fourth Circuit Appeals, which
right,
is also
right.
Based in Virginia, which is the most conservative in the. So anything, if Ellis comes up with the pro-conservative ruling, it's not going anywhere. You know, it's going to be upheld as it goes up. But yeah, he's been involved in just recently. He made a ruling in this case where he dug up, as I mentioned in the story, he dug up this long abandoned World War One era law, which basically gives Bush administration carte blanche to prosecute journalists for publishing leaks of classified information. You know, it says that it's basically saying, you know, that you can prosecute anyone, a journalist or anyone else, who receives this classified information and passes it on. So, which, as I point out, means, you know, the Pentagon Papers and all these things we won't see that from Iraq, because these people can be prosecuted. That's one ruling that he's made. He made another ruling, which I hope to write about soon in more detail, is that he ruled that this German citizen who was seized in Macedonia, he's an Arab, but he was picked up in Macedonia just because, as I say in the story, he was driving while Arab. There was no charges filed against him. He hadn't done anything. He was turned over to the CIA. He was renditioned to Afghanistan. He was kept there for months where he was tortured and beaten. And then when they decided, well, there's nothing we can do about him, And also when the Germans finally complained about it, they took him and they dumped him on a dirt road in Albania without any papers or money and just said, find your way home. Now, this man understandably thought he might sue the CIA for kidnapping him and torturing him and besmirching his reputation and ruining his family because they thought he just disappeared and, you know, run out on them. But now Ellis ruled back in May, he threw out the suit by this man, saying that it's essentially a state secrets law, because what the Bush people said was, no, if he brings his case, it would endanger national security. Although all the facts of the case were known from international journalism, and even in American journalism, which, you know, doesn't always tell you that much. So all the facts were known, but the trial itself would somehow endanger national security. So, and Ellis agreed with this, which again essentially establishes a state secrets act for the United States. So anytime they don't want you to have a trial or anything, to find out anything, they can say, oh, it endangers national security. Look, we've got this ruling here from Judge Ellis, and so you've got, you know, judicial precedent for that, and there you go.
They don't even have to put up a showing of what national security would be. No, they just, it's a get-out-of-jail-free card.
Yeah, absolutely. They don't have to say, well, of course they can't say why, because then that would endanger national security, too, you see. So, no, they don't have to do anything like that. They just have to say, oh, this will be dangerous. You know, this is the same kind of thing that, I don't know if you know, but I used to live in Russia for a while, and I was a Russian scholar at one time. So, I mean, this is like a Stalinist trial. We can't give our evidence. Again, you know, we can't show the defendant our evidence because it would endanger your national security and we'd have counter-revolutionaries or something, you know. It's the same sort of thing like that. It's one of the most un-American things you could possibly imagine.
Well, let me ask you. I know you keep an eye on a lot of different issues, Chris. We hear a lot from the right wing about, you know, activist judges who are going to let gay people get married and activist judges who let little old ladies who burn themselves with coffee get away with it. Activist judges, activist judges, activist judges. Is it safe to say that Judge T.S. Eliot III is the activist judge as opposed to some of these others that they sling mud at?
Yes, I would say he's very much an activist judge compared to another district judge who made a ruling about the same time, you know, the judge Diggs Taylor mm-hmm. in Detroit, who ruled that Bush's warrantless wiretapping program was illegal. Now, there's a district judge who's not an activist judge because he's upholding the Constitution of the United States. But here you have Ellis over here in Virginia, who is basically, through his rulings, is rewriting the Constitution of the United States. As you pointed out, as so many conservative jurists do, you know, no, the activism is all on that side, it seems like to me. If that's some sort of a sin, activism. Of course, I mean, that's just, that's a typical canard they use to, one man's activism is another man's, as I say, upholding the Constitution, just like one man's freedom fighter is another man's terrorist. It's all an interpretation.
So, I want to reemphasize something, Chris. Given this ruling by Judge Ellis, it does not bode well for the American people in trying to get their ripped-off money back, does it?
Oh, absolutely. Well, yeah, it doesn't bode well at all. I mean, it puts one more roadblock. I mean, it doesn't completely kill it. And as Judge Diggs Taylor showed, there's some good judges out there. And you can, you know, but it puts a gigantic roadblock ahead of it. And it just adds one more brick in the wall that has been built around, you know, our constitutional liberties. And, this money's gone. You know, this money, we'll never see this money again. This $1 trillion they've thrown down, you know, what you call this rat hole or a hell hole in Iraq, you know, it's not coming back. It's gone. And as you rightly have tied all this in together with the collapse of the infrastructure in the United States and Katrina and everything like that, I mean, this is a gigantic hit for our country to take. You know, it just, again, forget about the moral horror that we've done. Forget about, you know, tying our country to a war crime that, you know, will stain our national honor for generations, forever now. But just think about the practical hit that we've taken, $1 trillion taken out that we could be spending to make our country a better place to live. I mean, I know that's a really radical idea, but that's what we've done.
Yeah, it is. And the fact of the matter is, when you've got, I think, I don't know, maybe the American people have learned, maybe they haven't, maybe the voting machines will cancel it out if we have, Chris, but we've learned something here. from watching Katrina, from seeing Sago, from the Iraq War, from Afghanistan, from wiretapping. You know, the list is almost infinite at this point. What we have here is when you've got a Republican House and a Republican Senate and a Republican Supreme Court and a majority of Republican district judges, Republican governors, Republican legislatures, and a Republican executive branch, what you have there is a perfect political storm of corruption, ineptitude, and outright thuggishness.
Absolutely.
And that's where we are now, isn't it?
No, absolutely. And you're right. I mean, you've named it very well. And you went down that long list of Republican, you know, all the heights of power that they control across the United States system. But you know what? You know what? If there's any problem with America, you know who causes it? Liberals. You know, I mean, this is what they say. You've got, as you just named, you've got Republican governors, president, Congress, judges. You know, they control the entire society. But if you listen to the right-wing press, anything that happens, it's actually the liberals' fault. Liberals have no power, no voice. And so, I mean, that's just what you told me. It's right. But it just struck me that's true.
Well, I tell you what, Chris, I appreciate you joining this evening. I know it's late where you are. Let me ask you before you go, what are you working on?
Well, as you say, I'm working for Truth Out right now. I'm usually have a weekly piece in truthout.org. I've got my political blog that goes on. It's called Empire Burlesque. People could look that up if they like. We have the Truth Out pieces run once a week, but there's pieces there all the time. And just while I'm on the radio and plugging things, I have a new book, which is a collection of my columns from the last 5 years. Most of them have been in the Moscow Times. Or and Counterpunch and The Nation and things like that. And that book is also called Empire Burlesque. So we're just working on that, just trying to, fight the good fight and keep going somehow.
Well, I tell you what, Chris, I hope you will consider this program on the Head On Radio Network among your new friends. When you've got something to share, would you please let us know? And you're welcome here at any time.
All right. Well, thanks very much.
All right. Take care, Chris.
All right. Thanks.
It's been a pleasure.
All right.
Bye now.
Bye.
Chris Floyd calling in from the United Kingdom. Well, how about that? It's Monday. Are you disgusted yet? $10 million and Judge T.S. Ellis the Third says, keep the money. $10 million. Yeah, I know. $10 million is a drop in the bucket compared to $9 billion. But that $10 million verdict just told the other, $9.99 billion or $8.99 billion to forget about it. Think about it. Just let it bang around in your skull for a little while and think about $10 billion in the hands of nothing but Bush cronies. How many elections can that screw up? How many right-wing causes can that support? $10 million at a time. $9 million, $10 billion in the lot of it. If you spend any time at all and you listen, it will make you crazy. Let's take a break. Come back. Your calls are always welcome. 877-443-2366. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
This is Bruce Birch, and I'd like to invite you to join me for a brand new show here on the Horn, the Bruce Birch Radio Program. Tune in Monday through Friday, 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
One way employers honor their most cherished workers is by allowing them the pleasure of meeting a quota. Because management is so smart and in touch, the quota is always a realistic goal that can be easily met. Selling 80 sets of encyclopedias this week? No problem. The worker loves his quota because he knows it's merely a target and not a big axe constantly looming over his head that'll determine if he's still employed or living in a cardboard box next month. When you exceed your quota, you're sure to be given a huge bonus. Your boss would not just use this as an excuse to raise your quota in a devilish game of how much work can we pile on Sheldon before he starts babbling and stains his chair again. Yes, the rewards are great and easily obtainable for meeting your quota.
Do drop by Chris Floyd's site, Empire Burlesque. He's an excellent, excellent writer. And I think if you haven't read his stuff before, his Moscow Times pieces were just... Well, it's proof that so many good journalists, you know, Chris, Greg Palast, have to go outside the United States in order to report on the United States. Because, as I've noted, the American media is a dead letter. It's dead. It's done. You know, the CNN website tonight, what's their lead story? Mark Carr will not be charged with the murder of JonBenet Ramsey. His DNA didn't match. His blood didn't match. Nothing matched. You know, in other words, Mark Carr conned the people of Colorado into giving him a free ride home. Suckers! But that's the lead story. And that astonishes me. I imagine it astonishes our good friend Sarge as well. He's on line one. Hey, Sarge, thanks for calling the program.
You got it right, buddy. They do upset me. I can't stand this media. But I'll tell you what, if you want to know the truth, all you got to do is go to powersandmorrison.com because we'll flat out tell it.
Darn right.
And, in fact, today, if you go to my column, you'll find a list of the talking points on Katrina sent out by Governor Haley Barbour, and they are so full of it that you'd think we were Alice in Wonderland.
Wait, there are talking points for Katrina?
Yeah, see, I wasn't supposed to get them, but one of my contacts gets them regularly.
Mm-hmm.
And they sent them to me, and I published them.
Good for you.
I tell you what, now, they make it sound like it's going to be a tourist mecca. Like all the recovery has been just wonderful. And if you Elo got the statistics that were on there and figured them out, and it's only a 1% recovery, even by the governor's
merciful staff. God.
And also, I found out last night that there's a hospital that was in Bay St. Louis, and they evacuated the patients to Jackson, the state capital, not Jackson County, because Jackson County got hit by the storm.
Right.
And they have the hospital up for sale today, and the patients that are still in the hospital are still in Jackson and have not seen their family since they evacuated. And that just shows you how crappy it's going. They talk about the casinos, and the casinos are reopening. But what they don't tell you is, like, the bridge between Ocean Springs and Biloxi, which is a main thoroughfare, and people count on it to get back and forth to work. Otherwise, they have to drive 20, 30 miles out of the way to get to work.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even started being fixed. They hadn't even started it. Same way with a lot of the other bridges in Hancock and Harrison County. Everything is just as rotten as it can be. And it just aggravates me to no end, because we got people in Jackson County who are just about to go under. In fact, the suicide, people trying to commit suicide has gotten so rampant that it's just hard to keep the stats anymore.
Well, you know, the heartbreak just piles up and piles up. It's becoming a monument of blood and flesh. You know, most everything George Bush touches becomes a monument of dead flesh.
But here's something else that's going on that is really disturbing. My twin sister told me the other night that there is one of the trash collecting water department, whatever, that is going to triple their rates. And the reason they're going to triple them is because they had so much debris and stuff to clean up out of the system that they're going to pass the cost on to the consumers, not the federal government, but to the people that use their services.
Well, of course, because, you know, the people of the United States, well, you know, our job is to provide money, Sarge, for Custer Battles to squirrel away in Jordanian banks somewhere. I don't know if you noticed it, but Brownie, heck of a job, Brownie, was on this week with George Snuffleupagus yesterday.
I like that name.
And he dropped the dime on Bush again. It was amazing what he said. He said he had an email from what he called a very high source in the White House that said the president at a cabinet meeting said, quote, "Thank goodness Brown's taking all the heat, because it's better he takes the heat than I do."
Oh, wow. That is really, really something. But I tell you what, now I'm going to be on with, you know, Malloy's hosting Randy's show this week.
Right.
And I'm going to be on it tomorrow, along with Greg Pallas and some other pretty good guests. So I'm looking forward to that, because I want to tell people what's happening. The lies that are going on about what's coming down in the recovery is just killing us. It really is.
Literally, physically killing people. This is negligence by, or death by negligence, is it not?
Oh, it is, and they are playing this thing to the hilt. And the governor has said, "You follow these talking points, or you will be fired." To people,
I got to find time to slide. I wish I could during the show. I got to see these things, and I don't want to ruin what you're going to be doing with Mike.
Well, you can go ahead, because I've already made it public, and Mike knows about them now. And I just want them out, because I want people to see just what a sorry piece of trash we got as a governor here. It's awful. I swear it is. It's just awful.
Well, you know, I see connections where maybe others don't, but Sarge, you know, we're talking about this right now. A few minutes ago, we talked about the Custer Battles case and this activist Republican judge. The thing is, this case will impact many others that have already been sued or filed, where people are, whistleblowers trying to get money back to the government of the United States that's been stolen from them. And what was it, a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, we were talking about that activist judge in Mississippi who just told people with
Center.
Who just told people with homeowners claims and bad faith claims and fraud claims against Allstate and State Farm and Nationwide and all of those thugs, told them, forget about
it. Light comes out on that bit, you know, because he's got a one filed against his law.
Well, Sarge, his'll go through. You know that.
Yeah, probably will. And that's going to burn people. I tell you what, he's from Pascagoula, which is in Jackson County, the county seat. And the people in Jackson County hate Trent Lott. They will not vote for him this time. A lot of them's going to stay home. Some of them's going to vote for Fleming, but they will not vote for Trent Lott. It's the people in the northern part and the Delta that's going to vote for Lott. And every word that can get out about what's going on the coast, I hope will be a nail in the coffin of Trent Lott, because he is bad for Mississippi. He is bad for the United States. This man is a traitor. He has no business in government.
Well, you know, the problem, Sarge, is that everything you just said about Trent Lott is true. Everything you just said about Trent Lott, however, is equally true of Haley Barbour and who is it, Thad Cochran?
Yeah.
You guys have a lot of work to do down there.
Yeah, and there ain't many of us, but we're growing. Bob, I did it again. Bob, I'm going to let you go, and I appreciate you letting me get that say. And please keep up the good work, because we really need the attention.
Well, thank you, Sarge. It's my honor to try to spread a little bit of the news and a little bit of the truth. And thank you for sharing that truth with us.
Bye-bye.
You take care, Sarge. You know, Sarge is out there and a handful of other people, and they're trying to do some truth telling in Mississippi. It's going to take a lot more truth telling, but frankly, at some point in time, I think the evil is going to overpower itself, because the people of Mississippi I'm a Southerner, all right? And I'm not going to sit here and say that these Republican governments have come in because there's something mentally wrong with Southerners. There's not. You know, these are... it's a con. It's a fraud. The operative word is fraud. Whether you're talking about homeowners insurance companies, well, we'll pay for wind damage, but we won't pay for water damage. You sort it out. Oh, we'll write you a check for $1,000 on $75,000 worth of loss. Or, Judge Ellis III in Virginia somewhere telling, you know, Mr. Custer and Mr. Battles that they can just, go play, go live on an island somewhere and sin no more, okay? Thanks. It all comes together. It's all of one cloth. It is all of one piece. And the general overall piece is Republican graft, Republican corruption, Republican filth, Republican amorality, Republican profiteering, on and on and on. It is all of one piece. What's that old Pete Townsend song? The sea refuses no river. This all flows into one place, and it flows right into the Republican National Committee. All this graft, all this evil flows right into the White House, into the halls of Congress. You know, the Republican Party didn't cause Hurricane Katrina, but they darn sure made it a whole lot worse than it had to be by their negligence and by the way that they ignored the people who needed them most. Yeah, we're pro-family. Yeah, well, you know, ask the drowned family from the Gulf Coast, the Ninth Ward. Ask them how pro-family the Republican Party is. Right? Right. Let's go to the phones. Jim joins us from a remote, undisclosed location somewhere in the hills and hollers. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing, Bob?
I'm all right. You?
Pretty good. You know, I would just like to see some of these so-called Republicans around here who make themselves known verbally on radio stations and also who are in chat rooms that aren't very complimentary about a lot of people, how they would react if they were in the position of some of these same people down there in Mississippi, where 40% of the area that was affected by Katrina still looks like it was hit by a hydrogen bomb.
Yeah.
I mean, I wonder how they would react if they were being told no by insurance companies, and how they would feel if their so-called comfort margin were removed or if their job were outsourced.
Why, heavens to Betsy, Jim, they would be howling to the tops of their screechy little voices.
And these people claim to be Christians. Well, let me tell you something about these kinds of Christians, and I hope these bastards are listening to me. They know who I'm talking about. And you can tell them it's the cat daddy that's telling them this.
All right.
That there's nothing Christian about them. And one day, when that day comes, they will be spewed from God's mouth, and he won't have anything to do with them because they are workers of iniquity and evil. And they've done more to hurt the cause of Christianity than any people I've ever known.
Oh, I agree. But the people, that's the nature. They are that way because that is their leader. Their leadership is that way. This stuff really does flow downhill, Jim.
Well, it flows downhill, and I call it the Cloacus Maximus or the sewer.
Yeah.
The cesspool. That's where it is. And, you know, for some of these individuals to say some of the stuff they say and to be so ignorant and to be so just butt ignorant about everything, not having any knowledge of history or any knowledge of anything, to accept so blindly some of the crap that's poured out of Fox News and some of these right-wing religious ministries, it completely blows my mind that anybody could be so stupidly wooden and woodenly stupid.
Well, Jim, what you're looking at is the culmination of 40-plus years of dedicated action. You know, this, and you've got a couple of years on me, you probably can echo some of this.
I saw it when it started.
When Barry Goldwater got his rear end handed to him in 1964, the conservative movement said, my God, that was embarrassing. We're never going to let that happen again. And they started in 1964, and they built direct mailing outfits, and they built their infrastructure, and they built foundations and think tanks. And anybody who came along who wanted to advance the conservative agenda, they would find them and say, here, take some money, grow, be great, do good things. That's where Rush Limbaugh comes from. That's where Michael Savage comes from. That's where Hannity and Fox and Citizens for Tax Justice and Grover Norquist and, you know, and Jack Abramoff. The entire thing was created inside a dedicated movement that said, someday we will have our vengeance. And that day of vengeance is now, and meanwhile, you know, our side, we're wondering if maybe we should start working on it now.
Well, I think in this case, their day of vengeance has become their brief, gaudy hour, because these things will not prosper very long, and by their fruits they will be known. And I think the American people, just like that gentleman from Mississippi just said, will probably have begun to wake up and realize that, you know, what has been happening is this government is not in the best interest of the people, and it's not promoting their general welfare. I mean, the DuPont Company, now they're going to make major changes in their pension plan to the detriment of the worker, correct?
Yes.
And they used to have one of the better pension systems of any country, of any private company in the whole world. And now, or at least I thought so. I'm not sure exactly what it was. I've never worked for them. But, you know, once people begin to realize, and some of these so-called neocons, once it begins to hurt them, they're going to realize exactly, you know, that they've had their emphasis on the wrong syllable. And, you know, so what really blows my mind is how dirty these people are to claim to be Christian, and to claim any type of affinity for that faith, because if anything, their actions are, if anything, I've known Satanists who are more Christian-like than some of these guys.
Well, without a doubt, Jim, the fact of the matter is, it can be found all over the place. There's a movie showing now, a documentary that's out there being hustled by D. James Kennedy and his Coral Snake Ministries that says Darwin is responsible for the Holocaust.
Charles Darwin is responsible for the Holocaust.
Yes.
Well, You know, that's just great because I just wonder how he can reconcile that, and because I don't think that the photographs that were taken of those cats had anything to do with the time period in which Darwin lived.
Well, now, see, what they're arguing, Jim, is that Hitler was just doing a little proactive Darwinism.
Well, social Darwinism, basically the survival of the fittest, and that's been around a long since before Charles Darwin. My God. I mean, the German thing that was the founder of the Nazi Party wasn't Darwinism. It was the German Thule Society.
I understand that, but you're somewhere that a lot of America isn't, Jim. You know, there's a lot of people that, you know, if D. James Kennedy says it, they believe it, and that settles it. Or if Robertson or Falwell, the people that are actively trying to poison the body politic. We talked with John Sugg on Thursday night, who explained the really creepy nature of the Christian Reconstructionist movement and how they want to use our constitutional structure to destroy the United States, take power from. I mean, these are people who believe in real, live, honest to God stoning.
Yeah, I believe you. I really do. I mean, they would probably absolutely stone you the way they did Stephen. And they would, if anything, they'd probably revive crucifixion.
Sure. You know, this one.
I think that's a little too Roman for them.
Well, the one guy said, I want to bring back stoning because there's lots of rocks. What does that tell you?
I've read all the words in red, and I've never heard anything, read anything like that uttered by Christ when he was on this earth, that's for sure.
And that's the point. These people have nothing to do with it. They use it, and they are, oh, Lord, Jim, they're monsters.
Well, listen, you know, I will say something. I know you're going to get to the hour, but let me say this, and I'm kind of out of here.
Okay.
They will labor like scholars over the pedigree of their own ignorance, but yet they would have snored right through the Sermon on the Mount. And that's what I say to these other chat rooms, and some of these idiots that get on there and make all these stupid remarks and try to hurt your chat room, and they can go straight the F to hell.
All right. Well said, Jim, and we will take that as gospel. You have yourself
a
great evening, all right?
All right. Out here.
Bye now. I got a story coming up in the next hour. We've got another interview coming up in the next interview. I don't do interviews. We have conversations. This is Conversation Radio. Interviews, you know, you want an interview, go do, but not here. We're all equal in the eyes of the packets traveling the internet. We're all equal in the eyes of the electrons, and we're just folks, and we're just going to talk. We got a conversation coming up in the next hour with a really, really exciting, committed, strong woman by the name of Patricia Todd. We talked a little bit about her last week. This is the woman that they tried to take the election away from. The Democratic Party, my party, down in Alabama, tried to take her election away from her. They did not succeed. We will talk to her in the coming hour. Up next, we've got some news coming for you. After the conversation, if you want to get in, jump in, 877-443-2366. Email, you know, that's easy too, flies right in, bob@headonradio.com. You are listening to Conversation Radio. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio Network. To the wind of my soul. Where I'll end up, well, I think only God really knows. I've sat upon the setting sun, but never, 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 never. I never wanted water once, no, never, never, never. Listen to my words, but they fall far below. I let my music take me where my heart wants to go. I swam upon the devil's lake, but never, 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 never. I'll never make the same mistake. Never, never, never.
This is a Quality News Network. In Beirut today, UN Security Secretary General Kofi Annan met with the Lebanese Prime Minister and Foreign Minister. Security at Lebanon's four border crossings with Syria will be tightened starting tomorrow. The UN peacekeeping force should start arriving in southern Lebanon within a week. Annan also met with a Hezbollah cabinet minister. He demanded the release of two Israeli soldiers to the International Red Cross. Tomorrow, Annan will visit southern Lebanon to get a first-hand view of the devastation. He's urging Israeli officials to immediately lift the air and sea blockade of Lebanon, which is hindering the transport of relief supplies. In Baghdad, a U.S. general said today that violence in the capital has dropped by nearly half since July, when more U.S. troops arrived to help curb sectarian violence. He also said Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki would assume control of the country's military next month. Near Baghdad, at least 20 Iraqi soldiers and up to 50 gunmen were killed in clashes between Iraqi soldiers and Shiite militia. Also, a suicide car bombing at an Iraqi police checkpoint killed 11 people and wounded more than 60. In Turkey today, three people were killed and dozens injured in a series of bombings at a seaside resort. A Kurdish group claimed responsibility for two bombings last night that killed at least three people. Members are telling tourists to stay away. In southern Afghanistan today, 17 people were killed and dozens more wounded in a suicide bombing at a marketplace near a police station. 15 of the injured are children. In Kentucky, the National Transportation Safety Board says the Calm Air flight that crashed yesterday morning went down the wrong runway. Instead of taking off from the one it was cleared for, it took off from a shorter runway designed for smaller planes. An investigator also said the lights on that runway were not working at the time. In Colorado today, prosecutors dropped charges against John Mark Carr, the school teacher who was a suspect in the JonBenet Ramsey murder. That's because there was no match between his DNA and that taken from a piece of clothing from the 6-year-old beauty queen. He has been released and his whereabouts are unknown. In New Orleans, city officials say homeowners have until tomorrow to either tear down or clean up properties damaged or destroyed by Hurricane Katrina. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Business news is next.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
Prudential Financial and a subsidiary will pay a $600 million penalty to the Justice Department without admitting wrongdoing. It was accused of deceptive market timing related to mutual fund trading going back to 1999. Dow Jones has put six community newspapers up for auction. The publisher of the Wall Street Journal expects to make about $300 million in the sale. Google and eBay are forming an advertising alliance. By clicking onto a web page link, shoppers can use the service to contact eBay merchants or Google advertisers more quickly. Boeing has a $700 million deal to make 10 jets for India's Air Sahara. The planes will start being delivered by mid-2009. Toyota, Honda, and Mazda report their global production rose last month. However, Nissan and Mitsubishi reported declines. A new report shows that the median hourly wage for Americans has fallen 2% since 2003 when adjusted for inflation. Wages and salaries comprise the lowest share of the nation's economy since the U.S. began keeping such statistics in 1947. A new Lundberg survey shows that gasoline prices are at a five-month low. The average price has fallen 15 cents over the last 2 weeks to $2.87 a gallon. At the close of Wall Street today, the Dow was up 68 points, NASDAQ up 20 points, S&P 500 up 7 points. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White. It's 5 minutes past the hour.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Yes, you are. And it's going to be another exciting hour. I got story after story after story. And again, a conversation at about a quarter past with Patricia Todd, who won her election, won her runoff, then had her election stripped from her, and has now had it restored. We'll sort through it all with her in just a few minutes. Right now, let's go to the phone. Our good friend Luke joins us from Knoxville, Tennessee. Hey, Luke, how you doing?
Evening, Bob. Well, did you notice this weekend that apparently the rehabilitation has started upon the Prince of Darkness?
Which prince?
Mr. Novak. I saw he was on the Meet the Press.
Oh no, I missed that. I think I was recuperating from being in 97 degree heat at the Take Back America West Virginia rally on Saturday.
Understandable. No, he was one of the panelists on their had four people there at for their round table, and I'm like, I thought they took the everybody took the oath that he wasn't going to appear anywhere for a while.
No mirrors around him though, were there?
No garlic, no cross. You know how it is. It's one of those things. It's like it's just like I say, he just shouldn't be allowed near a TV. Be allowed to be on TV for a long while.
Oh no, not at all. But isn't he already on Fox or something?
Yeah, but that's hired him.
Yeah.
I mean, I accept that. I don't like it, but I accept it. But you know what I mean? It's one of those things. It's like, but you know how.
But bringing him on as an expert or
anybody on.
Yeah.
This is Russell who has flush on every once in a while as an expert. Yeah. And I'm trying to still figure out an expert about what.
OxyContin, little Dominican boys,
Well, that then they're going to have O'Reilly on about falafels and loofahs, how that goes.
Speaking of which, I was wandering across BartCop sometime late last week, and he had linked to somebody who had done an animation of somebody who did a pretty creditable Bill O'Reilly voice reading the transcripts with all the falafel, and then I'll get a couple of glasses of wine in you, maybe intravenous, and put it to some flash animation that I couldn't hold my head. I was just banging my head against the desk here, just laughing so hard I couldn't stand it. It's worth traveling back through BartCop to find.
Well, it's one of those things. I'm about giving up on Sunday morning, anymore. But I'll be honest, I wanted to look just to see, and I knew it wasn't going to happen, but I just wanted to see if there was any mention of, oh, by the way, we all got took by the GOP on good old Rocky.
Nope, not a word.
Not a word.
And I mean, that guy was the biggest fraud since Jeff Gannon.
Oh, well, geez, there's the most unreported story you ever had, there ever was. But like I say, here's a guy who is a GOP shill.
Yeah,
I mean, and it's like saying you guys ran with the story in the media, not you, but you know what I mean. And you're like, show something on it. Say we got caught, but we're going to straighten it up here and report. Now that this guy's amazingly enough, has apparently already had the appointment with Bush before he even got there. But he's going to drive up and see if he can knock on the gate.
Yeah, well, it was straight out of the Beverly Hillbillies. He hitched up his house and drove it up to Washington D.C. and pulled in the gates and. I just wish he could have four more years. Lord God.
I'm going to pretend to 20 myself in Leavenworth, but you know how that goes.
Well, yeah, that, yeah.
Have you noticed, though, all of a sudden now how all these people like Shays and all these people are talking about timelines? Now, wait a minute. Now, refresh my memory. I thought if you were for a timeline, you were a coward. I thought you were some kind of traitor to America.
Yeah, cut and run.
Timelines were good.
Yeah, that's cutting and running, isn't it?
Well, I mean, but isn't it interesting now how all of a sudden the suck-up win has changed, and all of a sudden now timelines are where we are. Yes, we all want timelines. Yes, yes, yes. It's like, God.
Oh, I know.
At least keep the lies straight. Write them down occasionally.
At this point, there is so much. I mean, I'm used to the pretty much steady stream, Luke, of garbage and filth and murder and mayhem coming out of this administration, but my God, it seems like it's bats out of a cave right now. I mean, this is the beginning of Scooby-Doo, where all the bats come flying out of the belfry all at once.
Well, now you see the new one. Now we're going to get for the next few days. Oh yes, it was Mr. Armitage who leaked all this. Well, If he leaked it, then why were Rove and Libby talking about it? You know, apparently almost at the same time, and the only thing they can show Armitage is he talked maybe to Bob Woodward.
I'm Luke, wait a minute. Wait. Did you hear they're not going to charge Mark Carr with rape and kidnap and murder? That's what you're... What are you talking about, Richard Armitage?
I know. It's one of those things. It's like, say, you know, how it is. I'm sorry. I threw the playbook away. You know how it is. It's one of them things, you know. It's like, say, we could talk about the Emmys. You know how that goes, too, you know.
Poor Stephen Colbert got beaten by Barry Manilow.
I've said, Darryl, well, you know how it is. You and I both are science fiction fans, so... To me, the Emmys have been a ripoff for 25 years, so we won't even go in there. Like, well, if it's science fiction syndicated, we won't cover them, but we'll go cover HBO.
Right.
We won't cover any other cable shows. But that's a whole different discussion.
It is indeed, and you know, or maybe you know, maybe we could talk about Survivor a little bit, or.
Like I said, I still want it to be Survivor New Orleans. If you're going to do this, fine. We're going down New Orleans. We're going to tear out a couple of blocks of the Ninth Ward. That's where they're going to live.
Yep.
You know, you've got nothing. Enjoy.
Fine, but yeah, right. And, you know,
well, like
that,
we said, it's already in the can.
Make the word really mean something, Survivor.
It's like I always said about Survivor. In my opinion, Survivor should have been, the way they should have done it is like, they should weigh them.
Yeah.
And the way you decide whether is how much you lose or don't lose is how they get rid of. It's like Survivor? Survivor, I call it political backstabbing.
Well, it is, and I mean, but that's one of the fundamental faults with our culture right now. And you know, I'm not criticizing anybody. I caught a little bit of grief Friday night. I'm not criticizing anybody for what they watch. You know, I am vibrating. I am vibrating because Marshall and WVU are going to play football here in a very short period of time, and I'm scared as a WVU fan. I'm absolutely terrified. We are ranked number 5 in the country.
That's a kiss of death.
Oh yeah,
I've been there. We've been down that road down here, so we won't even go there.
Well, and there's
and we can play Marshall this year too. So I they're one of those teams that's like playing Southern Miss. It's like they got to know how to play football. They don't kid around.
No, and you could and they're taking it seriously. This is not the season opening cakewalk over the little old ladies. Yeah, Sisters of the Blind. We can talk about all of that, but the fact of the matter is maintaining that laser beam focus is actually important, Luke.
Oh, I know. You know, it's like this stuff, you know, on like say Buzz Flash and all this stuff. It's like, guys, you know, we need a section where we, you know, needs to be top stories of the day or something. You know, just besides the banner story, but it's, you know.
Yeah, and don't put all your premiums up at the top.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry. I mean, I think y'all do good. They do great work. I think Buzz Flash is one of the places I go to first because it's got a little bit of everything, admittedly. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of those things, you know, where y'all do your premiums, you ought to do that like on the right side, right above where you have all the humor stories. You know,
yeah.
So, you know, put it over there, and that's fine. Put it all together so we can see everything.
And I noticed, speaking of whom, I noticed that... It looks like we've gotten to the punch first again here at the Head On Radio Network. Buzz Flash is now offering as a premium Will Kimbrough's Americanitis. And anybody who is listening to this program knows that me and that mouse in my pocket, Agnes and I, interviewed Will. We had a conversation with Will on July the 31st. Here at Head On, we were telling folks about this wonderful, wonderful new album, Americanitis, long before anybody else picked up on it. But I'm proud to see that Will is getting that publicity.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's a very, very important album. It's got some of the strongest lyrics of anything to come down the pike in a long, long time, especially from the, you know, country, folk, alt scene.
But like I say, but the nice thing though about Buzz Flash, I'll give them, is the fact that they'll cover the stories that if you watch the alphabet, you'll never hear. You know what I mean? It's one of those sites like Bart Cop where you need to go every day just to see, you know, something that you're not gonna see anywhere else.
Right.
That's gonna fall through the cracks.
Well, exactly.
Well, Bob, I see it's a quarter after, and you said you had an interview,
yep.
Bud.
Yeah, I think you'll enjoy it, Luke.
All right, Bud.
All right, take care.
Bye.
Bye now. And what we'll do is we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be having a conversation with Ms. Patricia Todd and learn a little bit about what it is to be a progressive right smack dab in the middle of Alabama. This is the Head On Radio Network. You know me. I'm Bob Kincaid. You know how to get in touch with the program. After the conversation's done, 877-443-2366. I'll be here. How about you do, too? This is The Horn.
The carburetor in the dark is gone, down to the metal man. Now that it's time to leave the ground, and maybe try to understand.
There's a place on the web you can go where everything is so topical you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. Clyde, Wally, and Dookie are there working hard for you every day. It's a place where you can go to raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. WBYAD40.com. So stop on by. The 101st Fighting Keyboardists of Kansas are ready to hear your opinion. There are topics of news, current events, and great humor. So let Clyde, Wally, and Dookie know that you're a working person too. WD40.com. Stop on by.
Guy James Means, straight talk, and great guests like author and reporter Greg Palast.
Do we have Greg on the phone?
Yes, we do.
All right, very good, Greg.
Greg talked about his new book, Armed Madhouse.
You'll see in the second chapter of the book about Big Oil that I was able to get the inside documents from inside the State Department for the plans for the oil fields of Iraq, which is, you know, what it, you know, it's about the oil. And you actually, you know, if you thought they had a secret plan, I go and get it.
Greg Palast, thank you so much.
Don't miss Guy James, weekday afternoons, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Howdy, this is Baxter Black, and if you're like me, you're concerned that the environment we enjoy today may not be around for our children and grandchildren. All the new technology in the world can't create more sky over our heads or new oceans. The Earth's natural resources, fresh water, land, and even the air we breathe are limited. Voluntary family planning improves the health of women and their children. It also helps slow population growth, which is good for our planet. So help ensure that people everywhere have access to the information and services they need to plan their families and help build a healthy future for us all. Population Action International is working to promote voluntary family planning around the world. Visit us at www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
All right, we continue onward, 18 and a half minutes after the hour. I'm Bob Kincaid, and we're joined on the telephone right now by Patricia Todd. Patricia, you are in Jefferson County, Alabama, correct? Hello? We lost her. Okay, we'll try that again. The magic sometimes takes extra invocation of the gods. But just to, you know, just to give you a little, and she'll be talking about all of this, but the Washington Post picked up on this story. As I've told you before, Ms. Todd was elected, won her runoff, and then had to do battle with her own party. Ms. Todd, are you with us now?
I am. I'm here.
All right. I'm happy to know it. Like, like I said, sometimes the magic takes an extra invocation or two.
I understand.
You're in Jefferson County, Alabama, correct?
That is correct.
And you're not exactly new to an activist role, because you've been involved with AIDS Alabama. You're the development director there. What pushed you into this run for the legislature?
Well, I also have a master's degree in public administration, so I'm always fascinated by the development of public policy and how it affects us as citizens and affects growth. And I spent some time in the legislature 2 years ago lobbying on some different pieces of legislation. One included trying to fight them from amending the Constitution to ban so-called gay marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And I frankly was just appalled by how the business is done. There's really, you know, these people are not, you know, public policy analysis. It's like, I don't even know if they really care about certain issues. It just seems like they just, you know, vote because my friend wants me to vote that way. And you know, Alabama's in bad shape. And I figured, you know, I think I can do as good a job as they can do.
Sure.
So I decided to run. And spent a lot of time walking around my district, talking to people, and heard a lot of people that had given up on government, just thinks that, you know, all politicians are the same, nobody really cares, nothing ever changes, and it really inspired me to keep fighting.
Well, you're a Caucasian woman. Your district is largely African American. Was that an uphill battle for you?
Well, it's 52% black, 48% white. It's a changing, you know, district. Quite frankly, when I decided to run, I never even thought about the race issue. I'm somebody who's always fought for civil rights and justice against, you know, anybody. So I knew that it would be, you know, an uphill battle, but felt we had a good shot. You know, and at first when I decided to run, I was running against the incumbent, George Perdue. And then he dropped out in January of this year. And then I got four other opponents, all happened to be black. And they really played the race card. I never, you know, talked about any of that. I just talked about the issues.
Well, you say you talked about the issues. Do you have a laundry list of where Patricia starts when she gets to the state house?
Well, like I said before, the primary issue is poverty. 76% of all the kids in Birmingham public schools live below the poverty level. You know,
that's stunning.
It is stunning. And over 50% of all kids in Alabama public school systems live below the poverty level. Well, that is, you know, so people keep talking about, well, we got to fix education, we got to fix this, we got to fix that. We got to start at the very basics. We got too many people living in poverty, and we got to raise the minimum wage so people can make a living wage and support a family. Nobody can live on, you know, $5 and cents and try to raise a family. An individual can't even support themselves on that.
No.
Ridiculous. So we have to start there. We have to break the cycle of poverty. We have a lot of people whose mothers and grandmothers, and I'm saying mothers because what I found in a lot of these poor neighborhoods is the dads are nowhere to be seen. You know, we have a lot of kids that don't have a, you know, male figure influence in their life, and we need to change that. We need to give young girls an alternative to becoming pregnant and, you know, raising a child. They need to get them access to education and some technical skills, and so they can support themselves and then
build a little personal infrastructure.
Exactly. You got to break that cycle, though. And it takes a lot of money. And it takes 10 years or so, and we're not a very patient people. You know, we wait till there's absolutely a catastrophe before we react to something. Look at Katrina.
Bingo. That was the same thing that came to my mind.
Yeah, and it's about time we start electing people who are thinkers, who want to serve people, who want to work with other people to get something done, but are willing to stand up and do the right thing. And that's something I did throughout my campaign. I think people really respected me for it.
I respect the stick-to-itiveness you've shown, Ms. Todd. There's an issue related to all of this. You will be the first gay member of the Alabama state legislature. You are, you know, that makes you a pioneer of some sort, although,
right,
frankly, what your sexual orientation has to do with whether or not you can adequately represent your district, I have yet to figure out. I mean, you know, sexuality to me, you know, one, maybe a couple other people, you know, not district wide. I mean, you know, call me crazy. But you're having to carry that banner, millstone, albatross. I don't know how you treat it. I guess that's what I'm asking you.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. I love being a pioneer. I tell you that I think I have waited all my life and everything I have done for this defining moment. And I'm anxious to get to work there to make a difference. I met a little girl, 6-year-old little girl. We did these series of picnics, particularly in the poor neighborhoods, and handed out school supplies to the kids before they were going to school. And one little girl came over to me, and she, you know, tugged me on my T-shirt, and I leaned over, and she said, "I want to thank you for doing this. Nobody's ever done any really things nice for us for a long time."
Oh, wow.
And she's my barometer. You know, if I want to succeed, when I improve the quality of her life. And
exactly,
we can do it. You know, Republicans and Democrats together can do this.
Well, I might have to take issue a little bit with you, Ms. Todd. It sounds like you're a bridge builder. I'm done building bridges with Republicans because every time I build one, they throw a grenade and burn it down.
Well, I hear you, but I had to fight my own party to get.
Well, that's the next thing. It's bad enough having to fight Republicans in Alabama. I mean, you know,
exactly.
I mean, that's Custer standing on the hilltop hollering, "Where are all these Indians coming from?"
Exactly.
But then you had to fight the Democratic Party machine. Explain, please, just exactly what went down.
Well, you know, Alabama is well known for its civil rights history, and you know that racism is alive and well, always has been in Alabama. And during the civil rights movement, the party was actually sued and lost a case, and the decision was the case that the State Democratic Executive Committee, which is the organization that governs the party, had to be made up of the exact percentage of the African-American population in the state, which is 26%. So after all these people get elected, of which I got elected to serve on this year as well, if we don't have 26% minority representation, then the vice chair of the party for minority affairs, which is Dr. Joe Reed, gets to appoint however many we need to make up that percentage. Well, he was given that power by George Wallace, interestingly enough, and has used that as a weapon in the black community. And I don't fault him for wanting to get more African-Americans elected to office. I don't fault him for that at all.
No.
What I fault him for is his bully tactics and intimidation of people, and trying to overturn my election, because he just was beside himself that a white woman won what he thought was a black seat. This seat had been held by an African-American for the last 20, 30 years, who didn't do anything for the district, in my opinion. And but they'd rather have him.
Well, frankly, that's the way the white power bosses in Montgomery like it.
Yeah.
You know, we'll let you, I mean, I'm about to make trouble for myself, but that's the nature of the gerrymandering.
It is, exactly. And I understand the concept. What with a district that's almost equally divided, you know, we have got to get a point in America and in Alabama where we elect the best person. They would not be happy if the roles were reversed and we said, "I'm sorry, this is a white seat. You can't run for office here.
Well,
you don't have the right color skin."
No. But the fact of the matter is, I'm relatively familiar with Birmingham. What area is your district?
Crestwood.
Okay.
Forest Park, you know, in that area.
Sure.
Eastern area.
You've got an uphill climb. So you won the election. You won the primary. Then you won a runoff election.
Yep.
And then they had a little meeting and said, you can't do this.
Well, what happened was my opponent and her attorney, who was hired by Joe Reed, frankly enough, threw everything they could at us and found some obscure bylaw that in the party bylaws that said that every candidate had to file their financial disclosures with the party. Well, when the Fair Campaigns Practices Act was enacted, had to file with the Secretary of State. So nobody filed with the party, hadn't filed with the party in 18 years, including my opponent. And there was a lot of, obviously, backroom stuff going on and dealing on either side. And, you know, we were all brokering for those votes. So, you know, nothing is ever as it seems.
No, not at all.
Not in politics, anyway.
How much has the sexuality issue played into? I mean, obviously, you're on the ballot in November. You have no Republican opposition. It would appear that you are a walk into the state house. But in the midst of all this fighting with your own, having to fight with your own party for the election, you won. Did sexuality play into it at all? Do you think?
Well, yes. I mean, you know, being gay just added another layer for them to be like, oh, my God, we can't let her do this, you know. And a lot of Democrats were concerned, thinking they'd get tagged with that gay candidate, you know, thing, which in Alabama, you know, doesn't sell well.
Yeah, because, you know, you're the only gay woman in Alabama,
exactly.
Patricia.
Exactly, I am.
Yeah.
So,
makes it hard to have a meeting.
It does. And so, you know, they're concerned about that. But I have demonstrated, you know, that I'm very serious about this, and I've you know, been very respectful, and it's never been kind of in your face about things. But one funny thing, I'll tell you, they sent me a packet. I had to fill out my biography and stuff, and it had spouse and children. Well, you know, for the first time, I really had to stop and think, oh, my God, this is, like, really official now.
Yeah. Spouse, not permitted.
Right. And so I put my spouse's name and you know, send it back in, and I've been laughing. Just, I would love to be a fly on the wall when those clerks get that. You know, because they're like, well, we won't ask any more about spouse and children.
Is this one of those situations where guys have names like Lynn or Stacy?
Yeah, who's the male?
Yeah. Oh, my God. But, you know, one of the upticks on all this, Ms. Todd, is I should hope. And I hope I'm not, maybe I'm putting words in your mouth. You sound like you're a progressive person. You sound like you're proud to look into the future and boldly go into it, which is part of my definition of so-called liberalism. I think it's just common sense. But I would expect that given what you've been through, given what your life is, given your work in AIDS and HIV education, that you would go to the state house with a strong human rights agenda, and the reason I term it as such is that women's rights and gay rights and racial rights, working rights, the right to organize your workforce so that you can have a voice with the you know, voice in talking with your bosses and the companies, those are all human rights.
Yes, they are.
And I should think that that's going to be something that you carry with you to the state house. Is that so?
Oh, absolutely, that is so. I mean, I've already been working with AFL-CIO here on the minimum wage bill. You know, but first thing I'll do. But I'm also somebody that, you know, feels like we need to look at our state budget. We need to figure out, you know, we spend, I think it's like 32% of our general fund budget on Medicaid. And we're not getting anything for that money. You know, it's the bare minimal. We have serious problems here, you know, and we got to really be looking for, you know, multi-year plans to these things, not just the 1 year let's vote to give them money and, you know, never hear from them again.
Right.
We need accountability. We need new, fresh ideas. We're going to fail sometime. That's okay. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's a learning process, and we keep moving.
Well, are there people? I mean, is there a caucus within the state house in Alabama of like-minded people that you'll be able to work with? Because you see, one of the reasons that the Head On Radio Network exists, Ms. Todd, I was born and raised in Alabama. I'm from the Shoals.
Okay.
And I live here in West Virginia now. That's where all my family is from. My focus is decidedly Southern.
Yeah.
And I know that we have been lied to for a long time and told that, there's no liberals in Alabama, right. And there's no liberals in Mississippi. You know, they all got run out when Ronald Reagan became president.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a lie. And so I guess what I'm looking to find out is, do you think there is a way that you can empower people to stand up and be proud of what they are and who they are and what they believe?
I sure hope so. I'm going to start, I have spent most of my adult life in nonprofit management, and I'm starting a 501c3 nonprofit organization that we can raise and funnel money into my district to help with projects, because I have some of the poorest neighborhoods in Birmingham. And we're also starting a political action committee so we can empower and train and encourage other progressives to run for office and not to be afraid. And I went through a campaign training that the Gay and Lesbian Victory Fund did, and it was incredible, and I'm so glad I did it. And I want to have something like that locally, that we can start engaging young people in the debate. You know, there are no young people involved in politics anymore.
No, I would guess that your executive committee, the median age of the county committee in Jefferson County is probably something like 65.
You're probably right. I mean, Paul Carnes, who's an openly gay guy from Dothan, also is on the committee, and he's 22. And, he's the youngest person on the committee, and there's a big old age gap between him and the next one. I mean, but when I've talked to young people, they're like, well, what doesn't make any difference? Nothing ever changes. You know, they just lie to you. Yeah, we've got to restore hope again. I mean,
yeah, you do, and that's a big hill to climb.
It is, I think talking honestly to people, listening to people, you never forget, I'm acting like I'm going to be president or something, but, you never forget the people who need you the most.
Well, there's no point in being there if you do.
Exactly.
But that probably speaks to a whole bunch of members of the Alabama legislature,
well,
Democrat and Republican alike.
Exactly right. I mean, they're all there because it's power, prestige. It's not like you make a lot of money.
Yeah, it's a free trip to Montgomery every year.
Yeah.
Woo-hoo.
Woo. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that. But I know I have a lot of work to do, but, this isn't about me. I'm just a strange politician, one of those lucky activists that got elected to office and wants to make the best of it.
Well, I tell you what, Ms. Todd, I hope you can go out there and run the flag up and raise a ruckus, because something I've said on this program on a number of occasions, everything good that has ever happened, not just to the South, but to the United States, has been a function of liberal politics. I grew up in an area that was eating dirt until Wilson Dam and the Tennessee Valley Authority came along and powered the region and empowered the region.
Right.
The civil rights movement.
Right. Social security.
Social security. Not one single Republican in the entire Congress voted for Social Security when it was passed. Every good thing in this country has come from liberalism and progressive thinking, and it is time that folks like you and me stood up and just stopped these conservatives, these Republicans, in their tracks and said, tell me one good thing that you have done.
Exactly, besides start a war.
Yeah, and that ain't a good thing.
I know, but that's what they think.
Yeah.
But, it also is something that I'm a very strong Christian, and, people are like, oh, you are? You can't be liberal and gay and a Christian.
Oh, no.
No. And I really use that faith to always realize that there's a greater picture, that I'm here, I'm an instrument now to do good, and that's what I want to do. I have the ability now to influence thousands of people's lives, and that's an awesome responsibility and honor.
It is.
Take it very seriously.
It is indeed, and I think that you will carry. I think you will carry that duty with great seriousness and great pride. Ms. Todd, best of luck. I uh, I hope you'll consider us a friend. If you ever have a word you need to get out, please feel free to let us know.
And I would encourage everybody to visit my website. It's patriciatodd.net, and we keep it updated. I've got a blog there as well, so would love to have people check in.
Well, we'll try and see if we can't make the hit counter spin a little
bit.
Patricia Todd, thank you so very kindly. Best of luck.
All right, thank you.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
We focus, you know, there was a news angle on this because they tried to take her candidacy away from her. But we focus on these things. Agnes and I'm not the Queen of England. I got to stop with this we. But now there is a we to it because it's what Bruce Birch does. It's what I do. It's what Dr. Bill does. It's what Mark Levine does. It's what Guy James does. All of us on the network, we focus on trying to give people the tools and the inspiration and the courage, dare I say courage, to go out and do it for yourself. Patricia Todd got tired of seeing what was going on in her district. Representatives there for 20 and 25 and 30 years who hadn't done a blessed thing save draw their breath and their pay. And she stood up and she has fought uphill all the way. And you heard her. I don't think she's doing it because Patricia Todd feels like her life she'll have somehow. I think she's got plenty of self-worth going there. When you're working in trying to help people in Alabama who have been devastated by and families devastated by AIDS and HIV, I think you're pretty much on the good side. Yet your self-worth is pretty safe. So when you try, you know, when people empower themselves and step into the political process, that's when you begin to see change. Yeah, you got to fight the money battles. I forgot to ask her about public financing of campaigns in Alabama. But, you know, that's probably, quite honestly, on down the list because, like she said, in her district, 76% of the children in her district live below the poverty line. That's Birmingham. That's Alabama. Guess what? It happens in Kansas, too. It happens in Texas. It happens in California. It happens in Washington, in Illinois, in Indiana, in Wisconsin, New York, Maine, Rhode Island. That is not an isolated statistic. That is not the personal shame of the state of Alabama. That is the shame of a nation. And she has decided to pick the torch up and assault that shame and remedy that shameful condition, or at least try. Because when we, you know, it's like what they say when you're walking down the midway. You cannot win if you do not play. And I know many of you think that the political process is something very close akin to what goes down on the carnival midway. And I know we talk from time to time on this program about how it's all wrestling. And right now, a whole bunch of it is wrestling. But it's when people like Patricia Todd get involved in the political process that the wrestling ends and the real work begins. She's a pioneer. She's carrying a mantle that honest to Pete. I mean, I'm almost ashamed. I'm ashamed I asked her about it. I'm ashamed of myself for talking about it. Not because I'm ashamed of what anybody does in the privacy of their bedroom, for God's sakes. But ashamed that that even matters in the 21st century in the United States of America. I am ashamed. Friday evening, we talked with Raed Jarrar, who had been pulled off, forced to change a T-shirt that said, "We will not be silent." I am ashamed that that takes place in the United States of America. I am ashamed that I have to call somebody like Judge T.S. Ellis III a fellow American. I am ashamed. Because he does not share the America that I want to build. an America where 76% of children in a legislative district don't live below the poverty line. An America where, like West Virginia, 50% of health care money spent are spent by Medicaid. I am ashamed. And we try to have fun and we laugh a little bit. We talk about this and that. But when you come down to it at the end of the day and you lay your head against the pillow, you have to know that you're laying that your head down in a land that does not give a tinker's damn about the least among us. You are laying your head down in a land where, well, I got the story right here in front of me, confirming what we talked about back when Ken Lay shuffled off this mortal coil. Going to sleep in a country where Ken Lay's estate matters more to the federal, where protecting Ken Lay's estate matters more to the federal government than protecting a living child. Going to sleep in an America where a tiny wad of tissue matters more to a bunch of religion industry goobers and gomers than children who have gone hungry for a year watching the waters recede from Katrina. I tell you, I am ashamed. Now, I don't know how you were raised. I don't know what mama told you. I don't know what daddy told you. I only know what I got in my background. But the way I was brought up is that if you are enduring something that shames you, you either stop doing it or work to change it. Because if you continue doing it, you will continue living with the shame. That's where we are. It's where you are. It's where I am. It's where America is. Ah, you see, Bob, that's why liberal talk radio won't never go nowhere. Because all you people do is sit around hating America. See, that's psychotic. I follow the writing a bit because, you know, once Air America got off the ground, the O'Reillys and all the other goobers, they're going to close tomorrow. They won't be on there for long, because, see, liberal talk can't survive in America, because Jesus don't like it. But it can, and it does, and it will. And frankly, if you think that the talking about our national shames is somehow bad, then here's the news. You're not part of the solution. You're part of the problem, because when you don't talk about problems, problems get worse. It happened. It works on the family level. It works on the community level, the state level, and the national level. When we don't talk about what's going wrong, it is a sure thing. It is as certain as the sun rising tomorrow that we will not fix it. If you don't identify what's wrong, you can never turn it into what's right. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Side. You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. 1,000 nurses continue their strike over health care while Ohio workers are locked out in a dispute over pensions and health insurance. Jesse Russell has more on both stories.
A nurses' strike in central New Jersey enters its sixth day today. Nurses at Robert Wood Johnson University Hospital in New Brunswick rejected the contract on August 16th over issues with the proposed health care package. On Thursday, the more than 1,000 nurses began picketing in front of the facility. Prior to the walkout, the hospital had been accused of unfair labor practices. The union representing nurses, the United Steelworkers, said the hospital had written directly to nurses to convince them not to strike. Replacement workers have been brought in to keep the hospital running at full capacity. The state has been monitoring the situation for the safety of patients. Workers at a Aramet plant in Marietta, Ohio, have been locked out after rejecting a contract this weekend. Represented by the United Steelworkers Union, the 290 workers offered to continue working under the expired contract, but when they showed up for work at 11 p.m. Saturday night, they were sent home. The workers disagree with many proposals from Aramet, including plans to freeze employee pensions, raise medical expenses by more than 80%, and put a cap on insurance for retired employees. According to the union, the company has had record profits over the last year.
Bus drivers in Hoboken, New Jersey, will go on strike Wednesday. Charles Hall Jr. is president of RWDSU Local 108, representing the drivers. He says Academy Bus Tours is refusing to pay time and a half for overtime, even though the company makes overtime mandatory. Hall says the union is concerned about those who depend on the bus routes, but also wants fairness and respect for bus drivers.
We don't want to strike, but the company put us in this position. Our concern in the union and of these workers is the community first, but we want Academy to do the right thing. We ask that they reconsider their final offer and their hardcore position towards these workers and do the right thing, find an agreement.
Antonio Espinoza is a driver who will strike on Wednesday. He says overtime and health insurance issues are important, but simple respect on the job is an issue too. And he says the company doesn't even allow drivers enough time for bathroom breaks.
They say that's the way it is, and you have to go to the bathroom. What you have to do is get an empty can or empty bottle and do your stuff there. You know, I don't think that's fair.
Here's today's economic report. Real median worker wages are down 2% since 2003. For the first quarter of this year, wages and salaries amounted to 45% of gross domestic product, a decline of nearly 5% from 2001. According to the New York Times, economists at Goldman Sachs say the most important contributor to higher profits over the past 5 years has been labor's declining share of national income. The Economic Policy Institute says that what these declining real wages comes down to is the lack of bargaining power for many workers to be able to claim their fair share of economic growth. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Sometimes, isn't it, depression? But I want to think that we are capable of bearing up under it. You, me, smart people, intelligent people, bright people, liberals, progressives, Democrats, because we cannot count on the people who voted for George Bush to rebuild this nation. Because you see, work with me here. Katrina didn't happen in a vacuum. Katrina is not an isolated event. Katrina is not over. Katrina is still going on. And let me make something abundantly clear, lest anyone have any doubt where I stand. Let me make it abundantly clear. The people who voted for George W. Bush in 2000 and in 2004 are as responsible for Katrina as the damn levees are. Can we get just real squared up on that? the people who voted for George W. Bush in 2000 and in 2004 are every bit as responsible as the man himself for over a tenth of a million dead civilians in Iraq. The people who voted for George W. Bush in 2000 and 2004 are responsible for the dead from the Sago No. 1 mine, from the Aracoma mine. You name me a disaster, and I will tell you, and I can back it up, that the people who voted for George Bush and the people who empower him are the ones who are ultimately responsible for it happening. Yes, hurricanes hit coastlines. Yes, sometimes wars take place that we cannot avoid. Not lately. Yes. Sometimes coal mines blow up. But George Bush, empowered by the people who cast their vote for him, caused Iraq. George Bush, empowered by the people who voted for him, fiddled while New Orleans and the Gulf Coast drowned. George Bush, empowered by the people who voted for him, put a gang of careless industry cronies and crawdaddies into the Mine Safety and Health Administration, who couldn't even be bothered to enforce the existing law, and as a direct and proximate result thereof, they brought dead bodies out of Sago, dead bodies out of Aracoma, dead bodies out of another mine in West Virginia, another mine in Kentucky, a miner here, a miner there. And where else do you put the blame? You know, I got real problems with these people. I voted for George, but, well, you know, kind of wish I hadn't. So what, you're smart now? I knew he was poison when he ran the first time. Why didn't you? Why didn't you educate yourself? Why didn't you look up? Why didn't you look beyond the he's God's candidate?
Al Gore's going to get my guns. John Kerry's going to take my Bible. He's going to have the biggest Bible collection in the entire wide, wide world. I don't know what he's going to do with them. He's probably going to give them out to communists. Maybe he's going to build a swift boat out of my Bible.
There is ignorance and there is willful ignorance. And the people who now say, maybe it wasn't such a good idea, I voted for George Bush. Those people were willfully ignorant because it was a bad idea then, too. But you got to understand, this is about evading responsibility, not dealing with the problem. Because there are millions of people in America now, I voted for him, but I sure wish I hadn't. You know, I'm not so sure how I feel about that. Because that's running away from the problem. Because, you know, that's their gig. That now we need to take personal responsibility. You voted for George Bush. You stand up and take responsibility for it. And you apologize to this nation for the harm you have done it. You apologize to this union for the attempts you have made to break it all asunder. No, I get this way sometimes, and I guess I owe you an apology.
So I hear the voices, but I'm the decider.
Yeah. And we know what the decider says.
Pluck them.
Mm-hmm. I guess I owe you an apology. Somewhere along the way, we've got to have an American healing. But man, it's a year since Katrina. And I don't see them trying to heal anything. I see a whole bunch of physician heal thyself being preached at people who don't have the wherewithal to do it, while others run away with the money. story after story after story. You know, it's not just what Chris Floyd was talking about in Iraq. There's been enough profiteering in the Ninth Ward in New Orleans, along the Gulf Coast. There's been enough profiteering to last this country a century. Yeah? Yeah. So it gets me a little head up. We got news to do. Then we'll come back and do the final hour of tonight's program. You want to get involved? Do so. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. In Iraq today, at least 40 people died in clashes between Iraqi soldiers and a Shiite militia. The fighting began yesterday when Iraqi police stations and soldiers came under attack. 9 U.S. soldiers were killed over the weekend, 8 of them in roadside bombings, and another in gunfire. In Baghdad, a U.S. general said today that violence there has dropped by nearly half since July. That's when more U.S. troops arrived to help curb sectarian violence. He also said Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki would assume control of the country's military next month. In Beirut today, UN Secretary General Kofi Annan met with the Lebanese Prime Minister and Foreign Minister. They discussed the UN peacekeeping force, which is expected to begin deploying to southern Lebanon within a week. Annan also demanded that Hezbollah release the 2 Israeli soldiers whose capture sparked the 34-day war and that Israel lift its air and sea blockade of Lebanon. Tomorrow, Annan will visit southern Lebanon, then Syria and Iran. In Kentucky, the National Transportation Safety Board says the Calm Air flight that crashed yesterday morning went down a runway designed for small aircraft. An official also stated that the lights on that runway were not working at the time of the crash. In Colorado today, prosecutors dropped murder charges against John Mark Carr, the schoolteacher who was a suspect in the JonBenet Ramsey murder. That's because there was no match between his DNA and that taken from a piece of the little girl's clothing. But he's expected to face child pornography charges in Sonoma County, California. In Mexico City, the country's top electoral court has thrown up fraud allegations in last month's presidential elections. Those claims came from the left-wing candidate who lost by less than a percentage point. Today's decision clears the way for conservative candidate Felipe Calderon to claim victory. In Turkey today, 3 people were killed and dozens injured in a series of bombings at a seaside resort. A Kurdish group claimed responsibility for 2 bombings last night that killed at least 3. In Alaska, the U.S. military is planning its largest missile defense test in 18 months. On Thursday, a test missile will be fired from Kodiak Island, while an interceptor rocket will be launched from Vandenberg Air Force Base in California. And Tropical Storm Ernesto hit Cuba today. It's now headed toward Florida. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Business news is next.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network-quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
DuPont says it's slashing its U.S. pension plan by two-thirds after 2007. It's among the first major U.S. companies to cut pensions following a pension overhaul law signed by President Bush earlier this month. Prudential Financial and a subsidiary have agreed to pay a $600 million penalty to the Justice Department. That's to settle a fund scandal to which the company will admit no wrongdoing. Dow Jones has put 6 community newspapers up for auction. The publisher expects to make about $300 million in the sale. Google and eBay are teaming up to form an Internet advertising alliance. By clicking onto a web page link, online shoppers can use the service to contact eBay merchants or Google advertisers more quickly. Corel is buying InterVideo in a $196 million cash deal. InterVideo makes software that allows users to record, edit, and play sound, video, and other digital content. Boeing has a $700 million deal to make 10 jets for India's Air Sahara. The planes will start being delivered by mid-2009. Diesel engine maker Navistar has announced plans to lay off nearly 400 employees. That follows Ford's announcement that it's cutting production of its trucks by 20%. Light sweet crude settled today at $70.61. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow is up 68 points, NASDAQ up 20, S&P 500 up 7. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
I'm trying to be charitable. Trying to find the third way. I'm not so lost in unrealism that I can't realize that Bush voters will not apologize. They'll make excuses. They're excuse-making people. That's why they are the way they are. So, you know, can we maybe make a deal with them? Where, you know, we recognize that we're the ones who are going to have to fix the problem, but they have to get out of the way. They have to, for 8-16 years or so, shut up about activist judges and shut up about trying to tell people who they can and cannot cohabitate with for the remainder. Just shut up and let us get the work done, because you've proven yourselves incapable, unable, and unwilling to do the work of the nation. In its place, you've tried to destroy it. Instead, you are not to be trusted. Because as a liberal, as a progressive, I love my country dearly. I want my country to be what it can be, to rise like the flame rises off the torch of Lady Liberty standing in New York Harbor. That flame doesn't lay flat. That flame rises. The tip of that flame is the future. And I want us to help raise America up from the gutters and the sewers where the Republicans have thrown it and trounced it. You know, you want flag desecration? I've had since January 2001, I've had just about all the flag desecration I can stand. I've seen it desecrated in Iraq. I've seen it desecrated in Afghanistan. I've seen it desecrated along the Gulf Coast. I've seen it desecrated in coal mines. I've seen it desecrated in ripoffs of Native American casino groups. I've seen it desecrated in album-burning parties against the Dixie Chicks sponsored by Clear Channel. I've seen it desecrated by James Dobson and Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell and D. James Kennedy and James Robinson. I've seen all the flag desecration I can stomach. So tell you what, let's just tell the Bush voters that they'll shut up and get out of the way. We'll get the work done and we'll fix the country, and then they can put up some other stinking conservative to come and break it all over again. Because you got to understand, that's the plan. If you've been paying attention, Republicans for 12 years drove this country into the ground, all the way into the Great Depression. It took Franklin Delano Roosevelt over a decade and a world war to fix it. It took Bill Clinton 8 years to begin to try to fix what Ronald Reagan and George Bush did for 12 years. We fix it, they break it. I wish there were some patriotic Republicans who would just stop trying to ruin the country. Stop breaking what we fix. But again and again and again, and like I said, you know, I'm trying to play chess. I'm trying to be two or three moves out there, and I can see as sure as God made little green apples, he ain't going to run in 2016. He will run in 2012, Jebby Caesar Bush. So there's got to be a patsy for 2008. If the Washington Post article I read is any indication, that patsy is John McCain. John McCain is being set up by the Republican Party to, frankly, lose the presidential election of 2008. George Bush is doing everything on this end to ruin as much of the body politic as he can so that whoever gets the next 4 years in 2008 has an almost impossible task. Comes into office with a war that he refuses to end. This isn't about staying the course or finishing the job. This is about poisoning the well. Here, hey, look, you want a three-word bumper sticker? Poison the well! That's the Republican Party. Poison the well! I don't care if it's Hillary, John Edwards, John Kerry. Oh, my God, please not John Kerry. Whomever the Democrats nominate for president has a strong chance of winning. Because they're going to be put up against either Rudy Giuliani or John McCain, who are both patsies and fall guys, to set up the Jeb Bush candidacy in 2012. Okay? And everything is going to be done by the Republican Party that can conceivably be done to stop the Democrat who wins the election and inherits this filthy mess from George Bush from getting anything done. You know, they love to hang on to power for hanging on to power's sake, but they also want to hang on to power because they recognize that after 8 years of George Bush, this country is going to be ready for a Democratic president, and they want to stop that Democrat in his or her tracks. So, you know, at least maybe we're square on why things may be the way they are. Now, this past Saturday, you know, President Nero. I am acquainted with history, and I refuse to repeat it, but I can recognize it when it is repeating of its own accord. President Nero went to the wedding in Kennebunkport of his second cousin Saturday. Yeah. You heard me right. He was followed by 700 protesters. The pity is that there weren't 700,000. But 700's a nice start. 700 protesters went and stood and protested George Bush outside, and I feel sorry for the bride. Kinda. Nah, not much. Bush family. So, but what, wait a minute, George Bush went to a second, on Air Force One, how many gallons, how much did it cost us for him to go to a wedding? George Bush went to the wedding of his second cousin this past Saturday. A second cousin. I mean, wow, somebody haul, fire up Family Tree Maker or something. How far away is that? That's like the daughter, let's see, okay, your mother's brother's kids are your first cousin. Their kids are your second cousin? For this, we use Air Force One and a motorcade and all the security procedures and little guys with phone cords going into their ears and talking into their shoe phones. Yeah. So let's get this straight. We probably spent $1 million of money we didn't have to send President Nero to a wedding of his second cousin in Kennebunkport Saturday. But he still can't find time and hasn't found time to attend even one of more than 2,600 funerals that have been made available to him by his own actions. You down with that? Over 2,600 times, TAPS has blown somewhere in America. And the call of that bugle was rejected by George Bush just as he rejected Reveille when it was blown at the Texas Air National Guard, and he was somewhere the hell else, sunshine. Let it sink in. Kind of burns. Kind of hurts. Over 2,600 times, TAPS has been blown in this nation, and not one time, baby, not once has George Bush had the personal honor to attend. I didn't get an invitation. No invitation required. You're the commander-in-chief, remember? You like to land on aircraft carriers in flight suits and wear little jackets and costumes and talk about mission accomplished and bring them on. You're the president, remember? Commander-in-chief. I'm the commander-in-chief. You get to go to the funeral. Any funeral? You pick one. George, pick one. Just go. Next time somebody invites you to their second cousin's daggum wedding, say, I got a funeral to attend for one of the soldiers who died on my word. Ain't gonna happen. This is the Head On Radio Network. If you're as burned up as I am, get it off your chest. 877-443-2366. 877, the number 4, Head On. 2,600 times TAPS has blown. Not once has he answered the call. This is the Head On Radio Network. Travel the world and the seven seas. Everybody's looking for something. Some of them want to use you. Some of them want to get used by you. Some of them want to abuse you. Some of them want to be abused.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business, anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
This is Guy James, host of The Guy James Show. If you like factual, hard-hitting, liberal radio, yes, I said liberal, then I believe you'll like our show. We're a proud member of the Head On Radio Network, heard Monday through Friday, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time at theguyjamesshow.com. You heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth.
the early hours after the tsunami, it was ham radio that was on the air, saving lives. When Florida was ripped by hurricanes, the hams were there. In the critical moments after the attack of 9/11, it was the hams who coordinated emergency messages. When disasters strike, the hams are ready. Ham radio works when other communications don't. To learn how you can become a ham radio operator, call the ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio, at 1-800-326-3942.
This story comes from the Washington Post. It boggles my mind to you know, the front end of it's the protest, but then you get down to the high society details. Stapleton, 29, a real estate businessman in Colorado, is the son of the former president's first cousin, Dorothy Walker Stapleton, and her husband, Craig Roberts Stapleton, who was a partner at the current president when they owned the Texas Rangers, and is now ambassador to France. Walker Stapleton and his father were working out with George W. Bush on Election Day in 2000 when Karl Rove called the Texas governor to warn him he might lose. I'm paying this dude by the word. After the Secret Service and local police cordoned off the area, the president showed up Saturday for the wedding at St. Anne's Episcopal Church, an elegant stone building on a promontory overlooking the sea just down the winding road from Walker's Point. Bush, wearing a dark suit, was accompanied by Laura Bush in a turquoise two-piece dress. The former president came in a blue blue blazer and white pants. Sorry. The former president came in a blue blazer and white pants, while Barbara Bush wore a purple pantsuit. Oh, God help me. Guests were brought in by four buses, except for some who walked, including former Homeland Security Secretary Tom Ridge. Yeah, he doesn't even get the back of the bus. Yeah, because remember, he dropped the dime after he left. And then, of course, they complained.
I think it is terrible that people are going to protest the president at the wedding. The couple that are getting married have nothing to do with the president's policy. They're just a young couple who happen to be related.
Huh? What? They're just a young couple who happen to be related and they're getting married? Those Republican family values are getting a little weird, Mavis. You're my sister! You're my sister! You're my sister! Oh, these weird, weird people. One protester said, an inconvenience for President Bush? My God, the Iraqi people are inconvenienced. The military families are inconvenienced. That's very telling of the self-absorbed culture that we live in, that people would be miffed because a bunch of rich Republicans would be inconvenienced. Okay, I'm going to leave it alone now. Wonder how they'll launder those white pants. Let's go to the phones. David is calling from Tennessee. David, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling.
Bob, you're being much too hard on the man. He had a lot to do there. And, you know, those pesky funerals, they work against the beautiful mind theory that the entire Bush lineage works on. You know,
who died and why and wherefore and how many body bags and why would I waste my beautiful mind on something like that?
And besides, W and Daddy had to ride a big, big, fast, wonderful boat up and down the river. I happened to pick up a newspaper. I was in another part of the country, and on the bottom fold of that town's paper, the amazing to me. President visits Kenny Bunkport, and there they are on about a 24-footer making a wake that would, you know, drown a small whale, but they were out there, you know, just cutting it up out in the river, having a few laughs.
And the funny part is they had just buried somebody when they did that. They were there for a funeral, too. These people are psychopaths, David.
No wonder they were so happy. They probably didn't like the relatives. But, you know, if you bury a child, you go out and hit the links, play the back nine, and have a couple of martinis, and life is good. To kill 2,600, you just go to a third cousin's wedding by association. Yeah, couples related, are they? Yeah, well, something about bloodlines, I reckon.
Big ears, buggy eyes, banjos. You know, we're Southerners, and we take the rap for that.
Yeah, well, sounds like they got that in Maine, too.
Well, you know, in the Walkers and the Bushes and all those, that's called breeding.
Yeah, I wish you hadn't said that word. I got a connect-the-dot question for you.
Okay, dot, dot, dot.
It occurred to me, as the newsreader was doing her job and doing a fine one, she said that based on some things that may or may not really be the truth, that oil was hanging around $70 a barrel, sweet crude. So help me with this one. What, a year and a half ago, we were just scared to death that oil was going to get to 60, and we were scared to death that somehow that would sink the economy of the nation.
Mm-hmm.
And I still have grave reservations about that, because the real long-term effect of that is not some fat cat in a factory. It's some poor guy that's, you know, carrying that load of Chinese-made tennis shoes from Long Beach, California to Elks, North Indiana. That's the guy that's taking it in the shorts. That's the guy
yeah.
they hurt by. But here we are, long time, 12 months for sure. Oil's been at 70-some-odd dollars a gallon and has been for months, but somehow, some way, the American economy, the American business structure, all the things that contribute to our gross national product, some way, somehow, because it's everybody across the nation that's dealing with it, it's not completely the end of the world. It's horrible. It's tough. It's especially hard on us little guys. You know, I'm now a fixed income guy, so if gas goes up a quarter, it really matters to me. My trips get shorter. My trips get more infrequent, and I think you have to do that.
Yeah.
But we're getting through it. Now, the connect-the-dots question that I'm having a problem with, if the American economy can live through what I believe to be a genuine danger, in the number. I mean, it may have been created artificially, but oil going to $70 a barrel and staying there is a genuine danger. If the American economy can handle that, why do the damn Republicans fight tooth and nail to stop minimum wage? The percentage change for the little guy pales in comparison to $70 a barrel oil, and what we have to deal with that. If we're dealing with the one, why are these people so afraid of some people having their income go from roughly $12,000 a year to roughly $14,000?
Well, because they've been, you know, it depends on who you're talking about, David. If you're talking about the people who are actually at the head of the head of the chain, the feeders on the top at the top of the pyramid scheme that is the Republican Party, it's good for them. You know, poor people getting poorer means rich people getting richer. All right. If you're talking about the shock troops, the cannon fodder in the culture wars, well, they've just been told that rises in the minimum wage mean death to America. I mean, you know, if it goes up $2, we're Iran, man. That's what they've been told, and they love it. They eat it up because they need that threat. They gobble up that fear because it somehow justifies all the rest of their evil and their hatred.
That's just another way to scare the little guy into saying, into believing, oh, well, you know, we got six guys working here at this burger joint. If that minimum wage goes up, there won't be six guys. You want me to let you pick out the one that leaves when I cut back to five? It's the old scare tactic. So I think what we're saying is what occurred to me when I heard that $70 a barrel, and I'm going, wait a second. There's no real way to connect those dots. Like most Republican statements, this business of the nation can't afford, the small business owner can't exist, he'll be driven out of business if suddenly their workers have a few more bucks in their pocket. It's all just crap, right?
It's one great big giant non sequitur. I mean, it really does not flow from one to the next. It's the kind of thing that would get you thrown out of any, you know, any first semester introduction to formal logic class. But it's a con.
That's what I thought. Because, you know, I'm sitting here in the middle of Tennessee in a small town. I've got my legal pad. I've got my two sharp number twos. I got a $4 calculator, and I can't make the dots come together. I just thought it was me.
No, you know better than that. It's not. If you stop and, but the thing is, you have to take the blinders off. You have to, the scales have to fall off of your eyes. You have to stop seeing in the mirror, you know, in a glass darkly. You got to see things for what they are. There was a debate around here in newspaper letters to the editor. Democrats hate working people because Democrats in West Virginia don't want to take off the food tax and the gas tax. Well, you know, the gas tax, might mean, what, 10 cents? Okay, 40 cents on a gallon. So what? But overall, that rise in the minimum wage is going to mean more real dollars in more real poor people's, working people's, you know, ordinary people's pockets than reducing the gas tax. Plus, you know, poor people will have to turn around with some other regressive tax, you know, beer, liquor, smokes, you know, the stuff that, you know, the poor people do because, you know, the rich don't, but you know what I'm saying. But does this make any sense? It's the same hoodoo. You know, it's, if you really love the poor, you'd take all, you'd cut all the tax, the food tax and the gas tax. You know, it's just a bunch of crap.
Well, I don't know about the West Virginia structure or what's going on, but I'm sorry, those taxes that are in place pay for something. If those taxes are rolled back, I mean, what happens to schools, roads, all those other things? They just continue to go down the flusher?
Yeah, and pretty soon there's grass coming up under the asphalt, sure.
Yeah, well, it occurred to me that it was just another one of those red herrings, it's another one of those lies, it's another one of those scare tactics.
Yeah, there's no difference between the when you get right down to it, there's no difference between the minimum wage debate and the if we don't fight them there, we'll fight them over here. It's a false flag. It's a daggum lie. You and I know what we would call it, sitting on the front porch in a rocking chair with the sun going down and something cool over the ice clinking in the glasses. But it's a daggum lie.
Yeah, a expletive deleted lie.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Oh. All right.
It's what they specialize in.
Well, yes, they do. That and 2,600 fine young Americans dead. They specialize in that real well.
And frankly, even that number, I throw that number out there because that's the official number. You know, we don't believe anything this administration says, David. Why in the hell would we believe that there's only 2,600 dead Americans? Those are the ones who got blown up and died there. That number doesn't include the people who come home and die, or die at Rammstein, or Landstuhl, or Walter Reed that they tried to close down. Doesn't include them.
They've also hauled nearly 70,000 out of country of ours in our uniform. Nearly 70,000 that are unable to ever serve their country again. And I think we all know what kind of treatment they'll ultimately get now that they're back here.
Yeah, and that's what
what they deserve.
No.
There's 130,000 men, but mostly women and children, that were Iraqi citizens before they were blown apart or just killed outright, that are dead. So you know, it's way over 200,000 lives ruined simply by death, never mind the economic impact of that area. And we don't have a damn thing to show for it that's worthwhile.
No, nor will we ever. There's not, I mean, we need to, somebody's got to sober up and realize that there is not going to be a democratic Iraq.
No.
There's not going to be a democratic Afghanistan. I give Hamid Karzai another year or two before he either flees or winds up, you know, as a hood ornament in front of a soccer stadium in Kabul. I'm serious. It's a disaster. It is not going to work. It cannot work. The philosophy behind it was so evil and so flawed, and you got Don Rumsfeld wandering around saying, "Santa Claus, I'm not." Holy cow.
That man is such a waste of time.
That man, he's crazy. I mean, he's the guy that you walk into the corner tavern somewhere in downtown Nashville, and there's a guy at the end of the bar babbling into his beer at the end, you don't understand me. I knew what I was talking. They didn't understand. They didn't, you know. That's Rumsfeld.
And you go one door down to get away from him.
Yeah.
Pay a quarter more for 16-ounce pap scans, but anyway.
Well, I'm holding out for the long neck, David.
They're fine. That's a fine American tradition, Bob.
You take it easy, David.
I shall. You too.
All right.
Thanks for the chance.
My pleasure, always. Bye now. Our good friend David in Nashville. Sometimes it all gets all over me, and I am stunned and frankly a little bit scared at the level of work we've got ahead of us. But man, if we're not up to the task, who is? Who is? Do I look at my darling recent high school graduate, my brand new fifth grader, my brand new fourth grader, my brand new seventh grader, because school started today. Do I look at them and say, listen, I'm not up to it. Tell you what, you fix it. You do it. You figure it out. Because my generation, turns out, we're a bunch of screw-ups. So if when the crap hits the fan, you deal with it, okay? Is that what we do? That kind of puts you in a corner, doesn't it? We've got to get it done. And there is indeed so much to do. This one for you. We started the program talking about the Custer Battles thing. This is from this past Friday from Reuters. A U.S. Army Reserve officer pleaded guilty on Friday to improperly steering millions of dollars in Iraq reconstruction contracts as part of a conspiracy involving kickbacks, smuggling, and, sexual favors. Lieutenant Colonel Bruce... why can't it ever be Smith? Lieutenant Colonel Bruce Hopfengardner, 46, of Frederick, Virginia. What did I say? What did I say about my generation?
This is their daughter.
Lieutenant Colonel Bruce Hopfengardner, 46, of Frederick, Virginia, was the first military officer to admit taking part in the scheme to defraud the U.S.-led occupation authority. Really? No. Hopfengardner, who had been a police chief in California, served as an advisor to the, Coalition Provisional Authority. His duties included recommending spending for law enforcement projects related to rebuilding Iraq, including a police academy in the south central city of Al-Hilal, the government said in court papers. Prosecutors said he and others plotted to steer millions of dollars to Philip Bloom, a U.S. citizen with businesses in Romania and post-war Iraq. In exchange, they received money, plane tickets, jewelry, alcohol, cigars, and sexual favors from women provided by Bloom at his villa in Baghdad and at least one other place, the government said. All right? Now, So it's Custer Battles, it's this guy, and do you remember, oh God, how long ago was it we talked about the man who came back from trying to set up the Reconstruction, trying to set to deal with cleaning up the mess that had been made. He was an officer in the United States military, and he blew his brains out when he got home. He had written memo after memo after memo. He had done everything but set his hair on fire and run around screaming, trying to get people's attention, to tell them about the graft, the corruption, the ripoff, the filth, the whoring and the carrying on. And no one listened. And he was as sane as you and I, and he came home and killed himself. Well, it was people like Lieutenant Colonel Bruce Hopfengardner who put the gun to his head. Because what is going on in Iraq will make miserable, anguished, agonized human beings out of the most honorable of men. Let's go to the phones. We're joined by our good friend Jethro. Hey, Jethro, welcome to the program.
It's madness, I tell you.
Madness, man.
Madness gone insane. Yeah, this Iraqi deal. I just can't fathom how it's going to end up, and how it's going to affect the American working class for generations to come.
Pay and pay and pay and pay, Jethro.
Yeah, and so now we learned that pretty much the only major construction project going on over there is this huge six square block U.S. embassy compound.
Compound? No, it's not. It's a city within a city.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got secret bat tunnel escape pod hatches, tunnels, things. I mean, really, it's real high tech, and they hate us for it.
Well, I mean, you know, it's going to be operated. They're going to have electricity and running water and swimming pools and all the comforts of home, while the local Iraqis are still going to be going without electricity, without running water, without everything. So I just think that's going to tip the scale to the current 91.7% that want us out of there. I think, you know, after that, it'll be 99%.
Well, I'd be blooming surprised if it wasn't already. I mean, they're lying about all the other numbers. Why aren't they lying? There's nobody there that wants us there.
Exactly. And I think, you know, Rumsfeld was supposed to come on today and criticize the American public for, you know, a lack of perspective and really basically, you know, not getting in lockstep with the Bush co-administration and supporting them. But I'm sorry, the tide is turning. The tide is turning. The anti-war sentiment is growing out there. You can see it creeping up through the mainstream media. You know, there's more negative press about the war and about Bush and everything. And the tide's turning. That's all there is to it. And it has to.
Well, but the thing is, and I'm not trying to throw cold water on anything or be a wet blanket or any of those other analogies, Jethro. But, you know, dear leader has told us he does not care if he stands against the entire tide, that we will not leave Iraq during his presidency.
Well, maybe.
That gives us a choice. Okay, we can end his presidency. We can take the House back, the Senate back. We can impeach him and remove him from office, because otherwise he has told us he is deliberately going to get killed. What, another, you know, how many have we lost just since January, Jethro?
Quite a few. More than necessary.
You know, when it gets to 1,000 a year, when it gets to 100 a month, 200 a month, you talk about the turning tide. It's going to take a lot. You know, that's why these guys are doing what they're doing with Camp Democracy on the Mall in Washington, D.C. I can't wait to go there. I want to be part of this.
Yes, hopefully the American people will wake up. And the ones that are still asleep will wake up after the election when they see the results. And, there's a lot of potential people going to jail. You know, there's potential war crimes charges as well, you know, beyond impeachment. So it's up to the American public, and what do they want? Are they going to, you know, are they going to continue to watch Fox News, or are they going to wake up and fight for the country? Because Bush is taking us down the tubes. I mean, they're trying to destroy everything.
Yeah.
That, you know, that we've spent a couple of hundred years working on, and to continue this business of staying the course.
Well, you know, I could almost understand stay the course if there was a course to stay. but there's no, honest to God, Jethro, there's not. There's no course. There's no plan. You know, they can print plan for victory behind him on a little banner 100 times over, and it doesn't mean there's a plan. You remember when they put out the plan for victory that looked like, I mean, I covered it on the air. It was available. You could read it on the internet. And it looked like it was, you know, it had everything but the drool stains on it from where the dog had chewed on the seventh grade homework.
It came straight from Mad Magazine.
Yeah, I mean, it was the foldover.
But we're bombed down in Iraq. You know, it's clear that we're wearing out a lot of our equipment. We need to be resupplied. This recall of the Marines, can you imagine doing your tour of duty? It's an eight-year enlistment. I think it's like four active duty. Can you imagine being home from Iraq for a year, year and a half, having a job, maybe getting married, starting a family, not expecting anything, and bingo, you're called back to a combat unit?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I've got a story here. There's a woman, Jethro, who absolutely, apparently, gave Bush all he could stand at a meeting with him. A woman from Maine. Her name is, Hildy Halley. And she met with Bush, and she told him, she told him he was directly responsible for the deaths of American soldiers, and that as a Christian man, he should recognize that he's made a mistake and that it was his responsibility to end this. And then she said, she was very direct, and he turned around and said, well, I'm not going, you know, we're not going to have a philosophical discussion about the pros and cons of the war.
I'm the decider.
I get to decide things. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to decide what we talk about, and I'm going, talk about madness. I mean, they really are. Now they're building up the big propaganda push for a strike on Iran. You know, now it's going to be the threat, the nuclear threat, the whole deal. We're in, you know, the 15-minute strike capability. You're going to hear the whole deal over and over. Instead of Iraq, it's going to be Iran.
Well, and that's already started, this con artist plan. What's his name? Peter Heekstra out of New York. Yeah.
Hoax.
Yeah, hoax. Yeah, just, yeah, Peter the hoax. It's the same old ginned up, dummied up garbage about, seeing Iran as a national strategic threat to the national security of the United States. And these daggum dummies haven't figured out that maybe we might be on to them. But then again, we thought we were on to them in 2003, and they pulled it off.
Well, no, we need to be on to them because, you know, Iran is not doing this on their own. They're not backing Hezbollah on their own. They are being backed secretly. You know, I don't know how secret that is either. But they're being backed by Russia and China as well.
Well, sure, and, because it's making fools out of us.
And we've already done all of Iran's bidding to them. I mean, they couldn't have planned the scenario to put them as a big player in the Middle East. They couldn't have planned that any better themselves.
No.
What we've done for them.
We've depleted our resources. We've broken our military. We have opened the playing field where the playing field was not open before. Did you catch the story? I guess it was sometime last week, Jethro. Turns out there's no meters on the oil pipelines from Iraq as they, you know, pump into the tankers. There's no meters. It's just an open spigot.
Sad.
Wonder where that money's going, huh?
Carlyle Group, Halliburton, and beyond.
You know, it'll pay for a nice little piece of property there, and maybe a new heart defibrillator, or maybe a nurse in a short skirt for Dick Cheney when he gets out.
I hear you. Yeah, that was the myth before the war. Well, we'll take those oil reserves,
How can you pay for the war when you don't even have any meters?
So, and did you notice where this? I think this first National Guard Armor Reserve officer was convicted.
Yeah,
he's either convicted or charged with,
draft
scheme.
Yeah, he pled guilty. Just had that right before the break. It's amazing to me. I mean, but where was that on the evening news?
Right. Yeah, it's another one of those Catch 22. You know, Milo. What's his name?
Milo Minderbinder.
Yeah.
Yeah. We can buy eggs for $0.04 and sell them for $0.03 and make a profit, and everybody has a share.
Yeah, and then that profiting, you know, make money bombing your own airfields and stuff. So, and the same thing happened in Vietnam. I mean, black market, you could get helicopters and stuff. So,
sure.
North got one.
Exactly. And Jethro, I got to roll. I got another call I got to take. So good to hear from you, man.
All right. Nice talking to you, Bob.
Later.
Fight the good fight, buddy.
Trying to.
It's madness, I tell you.
Madness. Later. All right, and Beauregard T. Cornpone, or Clampett?
Hello there, Bob. How are you doing now this evening?
Well, I'm pretty well, Mr. Clampett.
Freedom's on the march, Bob. I don't know what y'all be talking about there over at y'all's head-on radio network there, but I'm telling you, everything you're saying it sounds like hogwash to me, because I'm listening to the radio and I hear the grand master of the Exalted Knights of the radio talk show host, Rush Limbaugh, and he says, Bob, that why the liberals are to blame, Bob, and I can't help it but agree with that a little bit, Bob. And y'all,
now wait, I thought Rush was an exalted Sasquatch of the Clavering.
Bob, I told you don't mention the Clavering on the air now.
All right.
We'll be talking about that stuff on the air, and by the way, we do have
bake sale coming up.
We got a bake sale coming up, but we also got a bill before Congress. I believe it's been put forth by Brother Lott to repeal the 13th Amendment, Bob.
And well, I know you've been working on it for a long time.
We had a keg party, Bob, and we had dancing girls, and my goodness, it was a good time. It was a good time.
I mean, it was fine. Did you have it down at the Lott Seaside Retreat, or has he not got that rebuilt yet?
No, sir. He's still trying to get his money out of the insurance company. I believe he's got a lawsuit, but we ain't gonna talk about that either, cause
no, we ain't. It seems Beauregard, there's a whole lot that we ain't gonna talk about. We only gonna talk about how it's the liberals' fault.
Well, freedom's on the march, Bob.
Where's it marching, Beauregard? Tell me, I want to watch it. Where's the freedom marching to?
I believe it's gonna be marching into Iran, Bob. Be honest with you.
Are the little Clampets all signed up and in uniform? Have you got them in military school? Are they ready to go over and fight as freedom goes on the march into Iran, Mr. Clampett?
Well, the uniforms that they are wearing right now, Bob, are all white.
Got those Armor of God PJs, do they?
Yes, sir, they do. They look so fine in them uniforms. Yes, sir, with them holes cut out for them, they look very good.
I know they do. ArmorofGodPJs.com. Can't little clan uniforms. Sorry, I said it again. Sorry. Daggummit.
Now, Bob, I heard you talking the other day about this rapture-ready motors or something. What was that all about?
Well, what kind of car do you drive, Mr. Clampett?
Well, you know I drive a Cadillac.
You need to register with rapture-ready motors. Because when you and the rest of the Clavering are taken up into the clouds, we need to, you know, somebody's going to have to wax your car, man. I'm the guy to do it.
You're going to be waxing my car, Bob.
That's right.
Now you ain't going to sell it off to some bunch of cars.
Oh no, I'm not going to sell it to a liberal or anything. We're going to take care of it. I'm going to keep the oil changed. And if I tell you what, I do an especially good job with Ferraris, Lamborghinis, and Porsches, if you know anybody that needs those taken care of after the rapture.
Okay, well, I'll have to look into that, but I got another question for you.
Yes, sir.
I got another question. Now, I was reading a newspaper the other day, and I seen something about my good friend from north of the state line there in Virginia, George Allen.
Yes, Senator Mikaka.
Well, now.
We're not going to talk about that either. I understand.
We're going to talk about it, but he didn't mean nothing by that. He was just telling a little. He was trying to make a funny, see? And he was over there in some of the whitest part of Virginia. And that man, he stood out, Bob. I'm telling you, he stood out. He was begging for a joke, Bob.
Begging. With the camera in front of his face where nobody could see what he looked like.
That's right. He was begging. I'm telling you. You got to reframe how you see things, Bob.
That's right, Colonel. We got to catapult the propaganda, don't we?
Well, freedom's on the march, Bob.
It is. I swear it is.
Bob, I love talking to you. I know
you do. I'm still waiting until we have corresponded privately, and I am still waiting to see those enlistment papers, certified copies thereof, and attested by a notary public, or the noble Sasquatch, either one.
Well, now if these boys
where your boys have signed up to go fight and march with freedom.
If these boys of mine was to go fight, Bob, they'd have to. They ain't no army in the South no more, Bob.
Oh my goodness, they'd have to be bluebellies.
They'd have to be bluebellies, Bob, and I don't know if I can stomach that.
Well, that explains so much, Colonel. It explains we can't expect a good Republican voting, hard-working Christian, God-fearing parents like yourself to be sending your children off to fight George Bush's war in the federal army. God, that'd bring your forebears straight up out of the ground.
Yes, it would. Now, Bob, doesn't it talk about in the Bible how the races don't need to mix? Doesn't talk about in the Bible how it says that there?
Well, yeah, but it talks about in the Bible how Adam and Eve rode to church in Sunday school on the backs of dinosaurs, too. But, I mean, you don't believe all of it, do you, Colonel?
Well, I wasn't around here 2,000 years ago, was you?
Nope. Sure enough, I wasn't.
Well, if you wasn't here, you don't know for sure. Now, I got to tell you something. One more thing, Bob.
All right, we're running out of time, Colonel.
I know we're running out of time. If you let me talk now, it's all right, Bob. Now, look here. If freedom's on the march, and no, you know what? It's all right. I'll make that point on another day. But Bob,
that's all right. I got a question for you. If D-U-L-Y is Dooley and M-U-L-Y is Muley, what does J-U-L-Y spell, Colonel?
July.
I can't get it. Can't get any of them past you. Can't get any of them past. You know, that's.
Wait. I got a joke for you, Bob.
All right.
I don't know if you ever heard. You know what? I already messed it up, Bob. I shouldn't have told you it was a joke.
Well, we'll try it again next time, and you can sneak up on me with it, Colonel.
Well, but you know, you a hard one to nail down, Bob. You got quick wit. And you got a quick wit, Bob. I appreciate it. Now listen here, you better be down there at the meeting this Saturday.
Meeting?
That's right.
I got a meeting.
We're gonna have us a meeting Saturday, and we're gonna figure out just exactly what we're gonna do with all these immigrants.
I don't think I'm gonna be welcome there, Colonel.
It's General.
General. You got a promotion since we've been talking.
I did get a promotion, and I get to wear the red robe now.
Woo-wee!
All right, Bob, well, listen here. You have a good night, and good night to all your listeners, and I hope certainly someday you come to see the light, which is white, by the way.
Yes, it is, and it burns on crosses. We understand where you are, General.
Thank you very much, Bob. Now, listen here. You have a good night, and give my love to the children and to the wife.
I certainly will. Take care, General.
Thank you, Bob.
Bye now. Our good, benighted friend, General Beauregard T. Clampett, son of the Old South. Yes, Agnes?
I do so like Bo. He does give me the fan tods, you know.
The vapors, I swear, the vapors.
I'll be out on the veranda.
Yes, indeed, you will. All right, that's it. By the way, you want to see a little junior Klan uniform? I'm not kidding. ArmorOfGodPJS.com. You will scream. One more quick call from Jim. Hey, Jim.
I just wanted to wish the general good luck with the oral surgery tomorrow. Okay.
All right. Later.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, that's it for tonight. Thanks, everybody. Thank you to Patricia Todd. Thank you to Chris Floyd. Thank you for sharing your time with us.